robots to shake my stick at, so I hit him in the face with my rubber chicken. Cause blam, 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 what are they thinking? Oh, I guess that they know that I came to put on a show. Or should I say put the show to an end? My occupied existence shall transcend. So I poked the robots right in the eyes and jumped down the laundry chute, no goodbyes. But then I stopped myself before I go all the way, and I climb up this hole to the center, I pray. But then I look in the room, and yes, I'm there. But then a pair of hands pull me in by the hair. They were made of metal. And look at this, if it isn't my clone, Mr. Obvious. I told him the Stargate will be activated. He said that possibility can be debated. But then heavens to Murgatroyd let out a call, turned on everything on the board on the wall. Everything got all fuzzy, Mr. Obvious said. Now you have done it, soon we'll all be dead. The light was so bright and amazing and weird that everything turned white and... But then I opened my eyes and I didn't know where it was that I was, see, but I was there. And this door opened up and I stepped outside and I saw I was just in some sort of ride. And that's when it all came back to me. I'm free from virtual reality finally, but isn't Soup supposed to be around here? That's when I heard the message beep in my ear. It was Soup saying sorry, but he had to go. See this little birdie about, well, you know, also that I should get out of this soon enough before the record industry robots come and get rough. So I started to go, but I didn't. Instead, a quarter into the arcade fighter I fed, it started to shake and set off alarms, and it doubled in size and grew some arms. It said, I hope that you're prepared to fight. But then I pushed up, up, down, down, left, right, with the fury of the angry video game nerd. His power decreased down to only a third. But then he attacked me with the soft robot hands. It looks like he trapped me, but I had other plans. I pulled, pulled, pulled him across the floor until his plug wasn't in the wall socket no more. And then, yeah, I decided that yes, to get away from here, but no less would be best. So I activated my supercharged feet, ran very fast all up Front Street. But the wide wash and the E3, no poetry, where does it be? But I don't have time, I gots to go. I'll use the freak butter radio rocket show, but au contraire, because on the way there, the flying spaghetti monster did appear. And just as he was about to mess me up, the space car came and grabbed my essence up, 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 and away we go. But still the spaghetti monster in tow. Sevens to goodness, as our fate been sealed as we flew right into an asteroid field. The lights start to flash, the alarm sounds. The wall right by my head, a metal fist pounds. I see that I'm back inside the main chamber, and that means far much more than danger. So I say to my clone, don't you realize that if you kill me, everybody dies? Then he replies, it's already too late. Your reckless actions have sealed our fate. But then this commotion interrupted our talk. I guess that I just drove through a space rock. Coming up right behind us was the monster. So I pulled the super mega power boost lever. I get hit in the face, fly back in the wall. Thanks for entertaining, you've been such a doll. Laying on the floor there, I remember what centuries ago did occur, when Cosmo channeled the spirit of London, cause seconds of consciousness he had won, and then London took control and blew a hole right through the trouble. But is that what's gonna happen to me? Or am I really history, as my clone gave me a devious grin? But then the fluorescent lighting fell on him, and I looked in the rearview, but the monster was gone. But I had to wonder just for how long did he collide into an asteroid, or did he hide? All I know is that it's been a bumpy ride. But then there in a heap of fluorescent lighting, my clone leapt up and kept on fighting. You know that we're all gonna die, he grumbled as the pyramid temple cracked and grumbled. But without you here, this place can't function. And so I pushed the self-destruct button. Maybe I wanted you to do that, I said, as the big metal me scratched his head. The main chamber door opened, standing there with lots of robots, each with the cold stare. I knew I had to run into disaster and hope that the monster didn't get past this. So I jumped up onto the robots and ran. To get out of the temple was my plan, but I hit an asteroid and veered off course, soon to crash on a planet with untold force. Get grabbed by a robot stopping me as the temple collapses on top of me. Thanks for hearing me out, my friend. It seems that my story has come to an end. Oh no. But in their dreams flow into wherever they go.
Many pieces of paper, could this be the one? My dreams are fleeting, when will my sleep come?
That was the ostrich egg omelets from Octagon 8. That was the business card I found in my pocket. Yeah.
And that was London Laidlaw from a show 6 years ago. Wow. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org on your computer dial or your internet dial. I'm Robert Norris. I'm going to be with you for 3.5 hours. the occasional bathroom break and musical break. And who knows, maybe a break from you as you call in and give us news about where we can put our transmitter as the deadline approaches for us at the old faithful spot that unfortunately is now, unfortunately, something we have to vacate, and that's a pity. But if you have any information about a place anywhere in Santa Cruz where you want us to be able to set up an antenna and a transmitter, it's not extremely visible. It can be relatively discreetly put. Give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or get in touch with us on the website at freakradio.org, where you'll also find, archives of mostly other people's shows. My shows are archived elsewhere. And also you'll get a schedule, and you'll get an application form, and you'll get a chance to contribute, and lots of stuff. So freakradio.org is a place to go. If you want to call into this show, it's 427-3772, 831-427-3772. And I will attempt to answer the phone here. It's working, so get in touch if you'd like.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of headlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and laughter and headlines. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, looking mere into miracle.
Bunch of songs, hopefully of social significance, from Dave Lippmann today. Dave is not in the studio. He's an old-time singer, getting older, who's got a lot of his stuff free on the internet, which I find commendable. He also sells his discs, and I'm going to kick down a little money to pick up a couple of his discs, but also be playing some of his rap song. It's not really rap. A little bit is rap, I guess. That's going to be happening later in the show, periodically, to interrupt me, which is not always the easiest thing to do. Again, reminding you, 427-3772 is the call-in number, and you are invited to call in. So think about doing that. particularly if you feel strongly about anything you hear or you have new information or if you have breaking news, which can happen anywhere in Santa Cruz at any time. We also try to serve as a community resource in that regard, something we should know about, some kind of information that the whole community needs to know about quickly, please give a call. If you've got a protest coming up that you want us to announce, call in, 427-3772. If you want to reach me off air, I'm at 423-4833. That's the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line at 831-423-4833. And you'll often get an answering machine, but I try to call back within a day or two. Sometimes the machine is not in the best working order, but it's usually functional. Sometimes it seems after a day's delay, peculiarly enough, but haven't quite figured that one out. So Monday is, Tuesday is the city council meeting, which is not the regular council meeting. It's a study session, I believe, which I mentioned on Thursday. I may mention again. It's, I think, only an evening session, and there's no oral communication period, so it's not one that you'll find people who have messages that the council wants to ignore, but I guess at the hope the community doesn't want to ignore, although I think a lot of people come to council with naive expectations they will be heard and responded to by the seven-member council makeup. On Friday, there was a protest in Monterey. I announced it. I went down there with a couple of folks from Huff, and we joined the people sitting on the sidewalk in front of, I guess it was Walgreens, and next to a bar. The bar, one of the bar workers came out and was very irate at the idea that protesters were on the sidewalk, the public sidewalk, next to her building. She actually didn't own the building. She was a loyal worker for the owner who had a similar irate quality to him when he came out. And I did a lot of interviews there, but my machine, for some reason, and this doesn't usually happen with this new, fine technology, an iPod-ish type thing, refused to play it. And I'm sorry about that because there were lots of interesting interviews with the folks on the sidewalk. I'm going to try to summarize them. I may even, if anyone's listening from Monterey and wants to call in, please do and give your own update as to what happened. I can, of course, say what I saw, but I can't really speak for the folks who did the protest. There were very few, if any, I think there was maybe one homeless person in a group of, sometimes there were as many as 10, range between 6 and 10 people sitting on the sidewalk to protest Monterey's sitting ban law in downtown business districts during the day, which was done at the behest of the merchants very openly, an open sidewalk space grab by the merchants who don't mind putting their freestanding signs out there where, I don't know if it's legal or not, it's illegal to do that in Santa Cruz. Commercial signs are not allowed on the Santa Cruz sidewalks on Pacific Avenue, of course. You'll see them up and down Pacific Avenue since the planning department and the city police and the parks and rec and the first alarm and the host pay no attention to violations of the law of that kind by the merchants. When the merchants seize this space and take it away from the public, that's fine. But when travelers or homeless folks in Santa Cruz do that, that ain't so good, and they face $200 to $300 citations, or they have to get up and move along and go find one of the fewer than there used to be benches on Pacific Avenue. For example, if you look on Cooper Street, there used to be 4 benches. Now there's 1. I think Next Space may have been responsible. One wonders if Next, let's be accurate. I have no information that directly implicates Next Space, in front of which the benches were. Jeremy of Next Space, Ryan Coonerty's partner there, used to come out and regularly abuse homeless people sitting on the benches, or at least one particular homeless person. And we played that years ago, and we actually stopped that kind of procedure. But for some reason, the benches then disappeared. And, you know, I've got no evidence that Jeremy did that. I didn't interview him about it, or that any other member of the Next Space business did.
but it's an interesting coincidence, to say the least. So something similar was happening in Monterey, I believe, that they were removing benches or putting in benches you couldn't sit, couldn't lie down on. Again, a whole series of very explicit anti-homeless measures. Well, I guess in Santa Cruz they have this thick layer of hypocrisy that tries to cover it. Anyway, I don't have a lot of, I don't have any audio of the Monterey protest, though actually I took an hour's worth, and that depresses me, it did. I tried to fix it this morning, and it didn't work. So I'm going to return to kind of concluding what I did the week before, which was a visit to Berkeley with activist Becky Johnson, where we came in solidarity with folks in People's Park. And if you've been following past shows, the last couple, we played some of that, and it's now posted on Santa Cruz IndieBay.org. Or actually, it's on IndieBay.org/East Bay. Indie Media up in the East Bay. Indie Media kind of covers the state and I think in other places in the country as well. It's where I regularly post stories and audio, and sometimes I don't do it much, but other folks post video and pictures, which I really encourage people to do about local Santa Cruz abuses or stories. It's we get very little news of a real sort from the Sentinel or the Good Times. Anyway, call in if you have anything from Monterey that you want to discuss, 831-427-3772. My apologies to all the activists who gave me some responsive and interesting interviews. I think at least one of them was one of the folks who sat on the highway. Yeah, it didn't just happen here in Santa Cruz, where actually I think they stood on the highway, and he corrected me when I said they sat. In Santa Cruz, of course, there was a massive student protest against tuition raises and violence and murder against black people by police departments. Black Lives Matter protests, which unfortunately doesn't get specific to our Santa Cruz Police Department, in spite of the racial profiling of at least one officer, Officer Barnett, which was documented quite clearly by Huff's examinations of the citations he's given out since he was taken on the force in 2011. So, interesting stuff there. Maybe we'll hear some more about it. In the meantime, let's go back to hear some of the discussion of People's Park. We had heard from the, I don't know if he was the arborist or the University of California's flack guy. I guess he wasn't the arborist. We heard the management side of why they're cutting down all these trees because they're structurally unsound, which apparently was disputed by the previous arborist, and they are cutting down trees, according to one of our witnesses, one of the people we interviewed, a guy called Nate, and you'll hear the very kind of the sign-off of Nate, that they said they weren't going to cut down, and they just rolled ahead first on a week ago Thursday, where they cut down, they came and kind of did a trial run. Very few protesters showed up, apparently, or very few of the people who showed up were engaged in active protesting. There was a apocryphal or possibly true account of one person stopping, or a small group of people, I'm not sure, stopping a tree from being cut by standing underneath it and refusing to move. But the next day, the day we came on Friday, there were very few folks there. But we did interview those who were there. I'm going to play some of those interviews now. And if you have any thoughts and want to call in, you can, 427-3772, in area code 831-427-3772. We've been talking with Nate here, what's your role? How would you describe yourself, Nate?
I live in the community. I live about a half block away, and I've volunteered a lot in this park. I was on hiatus, but after hearing about this, I had to come back, and I'm going to stay involved.
You're one of the, four or five of us who are watching this?
Yeah.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, thanks.
And so, Becky, you got something you want to say?
Yeah, just one.
Fair enough.
So all I can do is observe.
I see. Okay, well, thank you. Yeah.
Judith has a stay-away order from the park. She's the one yelling, murder.
Can I?
Yes.
And we got
no, you walk through.
So we're talking with
Becky Johnson.
And Becky, you've been circling the park. You have some video equipment. As this meshed orange mesh fence area has gotten larger,
And you say there's someone on the sidewalk who has a stay-away order who is upset with what's going on here in the park?
Yes, Judith has been, she's holding a sign calling UC killers and calling them murderers. And, you know, she's very upset, and she has a stay-away order from the park. And so I thought I'd take you over there and introduce you, and you could get her take on it. So it's very articulate.
All right, well, let's do that. This is, of course, over on, I guess we're on Dwight Way. And I guess the street is, I'm not sure what this next, I think it's, is it Hildias or Bowditch or something like that?
Dwight Way.
No, I mean the street, the other
Hildias.
Street.
Hildias.
Bowditch is what it is. We've got some drums, milk crates, some backpacks. Free Radio Santa Cruz wants to know what's going on here.
I guess apparently they put a flyer out and they found, they had some arborists come and they found 77 of the 155 trees to supposedly be a danger. So.
We just had a long briefing from Nate about this, you know, Nate.
Yeah, but I mean, we've been hearing all kinds of rumors. We've been hearing that there's already been, there's a, you know, architectural guy in San Francisco that's already, basically at some point, the rumor is they want to turn it into like one little square park and that's it. And then the UC wants to build, like, all these shopping centers, you know, around it.
Any documentation or still rumor?
You know, you should talk to Christopher. He knows a lot about it. I can't remember his last name. He's been here for a long time.
Okay.
Christopher. And then Michael Deal might know.
And were you here? Your name again is?
Heather.
And Heather, were you here yesterday when this action was also going on?
Yes, I was.
How many people showed up to protest you?
Nobody. We all came on Monday, like three or four or five people came on Monday because that's the day that we thought that it was going to be. But apparently it's like the whole entire week.
And so actually it's just the last 2 days or they were
no,
here?
No, it said the week of, the flyer said the week of March 23rd.
But it actually began yesterday or?
Yes. Yesterday was the first day.
Okay. Anything you want to add?
Well, my thought is that, like, if they take this park away from travelers, outdoor people, whatever, and we all know that there are certain things going on in this park, but this, if they take this away, it's just going to cause problems over at Willard Park, you know, and there needs to be a space, like, for both, really, you know, because, like, if you want geese and dogs and all that, you go over there to, like, you know, collect yourself and it's, I'm telling you, if they close this park down or start, you know, really, you know...
Shrinking it?
Yeah. It's just going to, you know, then we're going to go over there, and it's going to be a problem there. So, but it's a matter of UC Berkeley versus, you know, Berkeley.
Oh, that was
too
much fun, dude.
So...
And we've been talking with...
Huh?
Your name again.
My name is Heather.
Anything you want to add?
No, that's it.
Thanks, Heather.
No problem.
Anything you want to say? All right.
I heard you calling out Heather.
So I'm now walking along Bowditch Street, which is parallel to Telegraph, a block up the other end of People's Park. What, interviewed for free radio?
I don't know if I can speak.
Well, see how it feels. Don't get too hoarse too quickly. You'll always... you know, hum from your lips is the way I do it. Motherfuckers! So you're not happy with what's going on here?
No, I'm not.
And you're one of the few people who's actually vocally, the only person vocally protesting it. Your sign says, UC kills. Were you doing this yesterday as well?
I was doing it actually Sunday and putting up signs on Sproul Plaza. And... coincidentally, I was given a 7-day stay away for violating the park curfew by 15 minutes, which initially the first officer that I had contact with gave me a warning, and then all of a sudden another one swooped in and turned it into a 7-day stay away. But that's because the buildings adjacent are... obviously I have informants in there, and when I went to go and protest this with the sergeant, he referred to the second officer as a she, and I had I had not mentioned gender at all, and so it was obvious to me that he probably ordered it, and because I think they knew I was an activist and just didn't want me. He wanted me as far away as possible. But as you can see, I'm still here and just being a little louder and losing my voice.
And don't hopefully lose your voice.
Well, I'm not losing my life like these healthy trees are.
And this entire conversation took place on the sidewalk, so she was not technically violating the 7-day stay-away order. Different from the Santa Cruz unique law that can force homeless people or anybody, but is used almost exclusively with homeless people and for nonviolent, trivial, you're in the park after dark type offenses. In Berkeley, as on any private property, a private property owner can demand someone stay away from their property, or at least won't give them a trespass warning. I guess UC Berkeley, even though it's supposed to be a state, a public university, the bureaucrats there can do it without any kind of public hearing or anything, and can do it simply on the basis of a police officer's say-so. And they do. I don't know the exact procedure. That's different than Santa Cruz's police department, which can do so on a much broader swath of public property that isn't has nothing to do with the university. Here in Santa Cruz, if you're on any kind of park area or even Pacific Avenue, anything that is within the jurisdiction of Parks and Rec, which includes a lot of apparently non-park-looking places, they can give you a stay-away order if you violate, if they issue you an infraction ticket for anything. And that can be for a huge variety of things, ranging from bouncing a ball on Pacific Avenue to not moving your table, your political table, every hour. Again, a relatively unique to Santa Cruz rule, all designed to give the police the power to intimidate those that they want don't want downtown. And they're doing this in conjunction in Santa Cruz with the hosts, the first alarm guards, disgruntled or I might call them imperialistic merchants who somehow feel they own the sidewalks and can move people along when they want or if they want. It's a very limited structure of rights that people now have in Santa Cruz. As I've said before, if you want to sit down on the sidewalk, you have less than 1% of the Pacific Avenue sidewalk to do it on, which is an amazing statistic for me, but you find, if you look at it very carefully, that it's true with all the 14-foot forbidden zone swaths that are illegal to be at. Anyway, here she is. She's still there. This woman, guess her name is Judith. I think that's her name. She hasn't identified herself yet, but I believe this is the woman that Becky Johnson was talking about, giving the history of, well, her involvement in this situation. Let's hear some more.
They're saying that they're unsafe, but UC's agenda is pretty clear. They want to clear this park and build here. It's a lot of money for UC to be made by developing this hallowed ground, the birthplace of free speech.
Has there been much resistance to this activity in the community?
Unfortunately not. It doesn't seem to be a lot of resistance. A lot of people have complained, but no one seems to be stepping up and
doing what you're doing, at least.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of people were not even born, you know, at the time that this all started. And
1969.
Don't know their history and don't know that that the park's been through a lot of adversity and prevailed and hopefully will this time. They can cut all the trees down and plow the park over, but it will always be People's Park. That can't be changed.
Well, I know the volleyball court went in 20 years ago, and it got taken out by the people.
I had just moved to Berkeley and remember coming down to the park that night, you know, because I'd never been to a riot. And Yeah, that was when I first moved here, and of course, the people saw through what was going on, and or the people that cared at the time, and put a halt to it. And where are they now?
Sipping their lattes somewhere else.
Yeah, well,
sleeping
I was going to chain myself to that acacia over there that it's apparently coming down. It's a perfectly good tree. The arborist here is saying that they're doing it because it's unsafe. He refused to give me his name, by the way.
Dave Johnson.
Is the arborist?
If you're talking about the tall fellow.
Well, the apparent tree expert who seems to think that the trees are structurally unsafe.
Is this an Asian fellow or an Anglo guy?
Anglo.
Yeah, that was there was an individual I actually interviewed. His name is Dave Johnson.
Okay, well, what are his credentials? I'd like to know.
Yep. All right.
You're welcome. I really ought to get a hold of the Garveys, some folks I met just recently in Alameda, and they're true tree lovers. A true arborist would not condone the cutting down of a true tree. I mean, a healthy tree. And they're structurally fine. They're not. There are a few trees in the park, yes, that are dead. I examined them as a layperson, and any tree that was slated for cutting seemed wick, and there was life in it, and the officer who slammed this 7 day on me, I had mentioned being here to protest the cutting, and she looked at me with this very grave and condescending look, saying, "They're diseased." And I said, "Well, if you were diseased, I'd try to cure you, not kill you."
And is the analogy accurate? I mean, can diseased trees be brought back to health?
Apparently, yes. If a tree has
I know nothing about trees myself.
I don't know that much either. I can't. I know that trees are cured. I don't know how. That's all up to the experts. And I don't know as much about trees as I'd like to. I actually know more than I give myself credit, because I was trying to name them as I was hugging each one, knowing that they might be coming down.
Tree hugger?
Well, yeah, I am a bona fide tree hugging lady of the canyon, yeah.
I got you. So, was there any active resistance yesterday to this, other than your speaking out, carrying a sign?
I wasn't here most of the day yesterday. I had some other pressing things I had to attend to, but I was keeping contact with people who were, and I did not know that they had started up in this quadrant, and
but here you are. And
yeah, I'm here.
Were you here yesterday?
Part of yesterday, yes.
Did you? We've been talking with.
My name is Judith Scott.
And good luck in the next 6 days.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You too.
Yeah. Well, what's your name?
It's Mark Simon.
And Mark, did you see any kind of resistance yesterday to this tree cutting?
Not what I would call resistance, but people that were, I saw a few people, especially some of the boomer generation and some who were younger than that, that stood by in dismay as it happened, but not a whole lot. Yeah, something that really had me taken aback was seeing just how little resistance there was to what was going on. I am a student not at Cal, but I do use Cal as a study hall. And something that really seems evident to me is just how into their studies and private life so many people are. Not that that's completely horrible, but it just seems like people are just so obsessed with trying to, say, get that A on that biochem test, or if they're not studying, they're hanging with their friends or playing a video game or obsessed with their electronics, and it seems like so much of the campus just falls into that realm, and there seemed to be very, very little caring or concern about what was going on here at People's Park. I find that disconcerting, because the thing is, No matter what your political orientation is or hate hippies or whatever, the place does have historical significance. And for that reason, I felt there really ought to be community and campus input to any major culling of trees that goes on, especially when it doesn't seem to me completely convincing that all these trees taken out were all diseased or structurally unsafe and had to go. So, like I say, I'm really in some dismay on seeing what's going on, but perhaps more in dismay on just a lack of resistance, a lack of caring among so many people connected with campus and community.
No, I see somebody as, was beginning to tear at the orange mesh. Was there any action yesterday at all that may have discouraged the these trucks? Now the two of them, what do they call these things? They're tearing down the trees that sent them home early.
Well, I know that it did rain earlier in the week, so that probably discouraged the arborists and crew from going ahead with tree removal. Although yesterday I did see some officers, probably associated with the Berkeley Police Department or the UC Police. So obviously, if someone was really going to muck with what's going on, obviously they'd be risking arrest rather quickly. So
you didn't see any actual resistance? People hugging trees, sitting under trees, stopping the chipper from chipping?
I personally didn't see it. I did hear of one person that did do that, but I wasn't here when that occurred.
Any arrests around that you heard of?
I didn't hear of any arrests.
And we've been talking with
Mark Simon.
Anything you want to say, Mark, else about this you think people should know about? We have spoken to a number of other people about it. We've gotten some of the history of the seemingly shady doings of UC around this. But anything you want to add? Does this impact homeless people in the community of Berkeley much?
I think it does in terms of setting a precedent. Homeless people have other places where they can kind of camp out to the extent that UC allows it or the city of Berkeley allows it. However, the ease with which the tree culling was done, I think, sets a precedent, especially with the new laws that the Berkeley City Council passed, to really try to push homeless people away from areas that, say, businesses don't want them, other organizations don't want them. So with that in mind, that's also of concern, because I feel that a precedent set where it's easier to go push around the homeless, not to mention the laws that were recently passed, that makes it tougher for homeless people to camp out, sit live.
There is a video we saw recently online of ambassadors, or one of them anyway, attacking a homeless person.
I didn't see that video, but I'll certainly check it out.
It's in the Chronicle today as well. It's a story in the second section, I believe.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out. But yeah, you would think Berkeley would be something of a humane model for dealing with homelessness.
Laws have not actually been passed, but there was a council majority that sent them to the city manager's office for, quote, I guess it was effectuation or implementation, which meant they're going to be coming back to the city council in legalistic form, and then they will be passed, and then a month later they'll go into effect. Although there was quite a body of protesters at the Santa Cruz, I should say, the Berkeley City Council meeting, gosh, a month or two ago, and I played some of that on free radio. Again, even there, though, even lesser laws that criminalize homeless people from, putting their backpacks down within 3 feet of a tree berm, unattended property, a variety of restrictions. In Santa Cruz, we have much harsher restrictions, which were passed, at least in more embryonic form, many, many years ago, 20 years ago, 1994. And before that, they used a sitting on public property or misuse of public property law, which we could challenge because the law actually had wording something which is it was illegal then and still is to sit, stand, or lie on public property. I'm not quite sure if that was the wording for anything other than that for which it was designed or customarily used. And of course, we would show that sitting down on a tree berm was customarily used, so they had to make it a ban to sit within 6 feet, then within, I think they jumped from 6 to 14 feet in 2002 here in Santa Cruz. And now it is still not just, it's 14 feet, plus all the areas of in the what is called the performance pins, the marked off areas in blue, red, and yellow. These are not designed for people to sit in or sit down on. Therefore, they add to the forbidden zones, leaving, as I said, less than 1% of the Santa Cruz sidewalk for a person to sit on. Or spare change at, for that matter, unless you want to regard, I guess spare changing might be regarded as a First Amendment activity. And a number of these zones are regarded as First Amendment zones. The idea that you have to establish special zones where the First Amendment applies, of course, is in direct contradiction to what the real spirit, and I would even say the letter of the First Amendment is, although the First Amendment, which says, you know, government shall make no law regarding abridging the freedom of the speech, the press, the right of the people peaceably to assemble for redress of grievances. And there's more to it, too. And that has been extended not just from to Congress, but to local governments as well. And that's exactly what the city of Santa Cruz did, claiming there was a time, place, and manner restriction. Similarly in Berkeley. My point, however, in this whole brief, not so brief interruption, is point out that these laws have not passed in Berkeley yet. In fact, when they did pass a sitting ban in 2012, it was overturned by the voters by initiative. I think I have that right. When they threatened to pass it, the voters got it on the ballot, and it was narrowly voted down in 2012 at the general election. So let's hear some more. Just another comment. Judith talked about a riot in Berkeley when the volleyball court, I think that's what she was referring to, when the Berkeley activists tore out the volleyball court that the UC Berkeley put in. And they've been protesting it, circling around it, denouncing it as a form of paving over People's Park without any kind of public user development process, without consulting the people using the park. And it was a form of the university's attempt to regain control of establish, you know, its tame and de-homelessize the park as well. A lot of homeless people use the park. Turn it into a sort of a yuppie scene. And that was very actively resisted, and the volleyball court was torn out. But it wasn't a riot. There was a directed action that was done, and the university did not prosecute anybody, nor did the police, nor did the city. There was a recognition, I suppose, that it was something that the community wanted to do, or at least significant portions of the community in the neighborhood. There were four people who were, numerous people arrested at different times for resistance actions in the park. They had what's called the bulldozer alert, where people would come and try to stand in the way of the bulldozer as they were going to plow up areas to put in new sports courts. I was arrested at one point, I believe. I think that's where I met an attorney that I later got a lot of good work from, activist and attorney David Beauvais of Berkeley, who worked with Kate Wells down here on a number of human rights issues, usually unsuccessfully, but I don't really blame him for that. When you're dealing with courts that are very, very sympathetic to the police and very, very reluctant to engage in uphold constitutional rights, it's a real problem. So, here's some more from People's Park, and perhaps your phone calls, if you have any thoughts or anything you want to add. If you happen to be a Berkeleyite who has any comments, or someone who's used People's Park, or someone who has some thoughts on how this might relate to Berkeley and how our parks are closed at night and being increasingly made hostile for homeless folks in order to pander to the fears of and the privileges and the predilections of some local residents. Give a call, 427-3772.
and we'll talk, or you can talk, and I'll listen.
But I'm sensing more and more pressure from businesses and citizens that don't particularly want to see homeless people in their face, panhandling, et cetera, et cetera. I can understand some of it, but at the same time, it's going to make the problem worse because they have to be somewhere, and it's just going to disperse the problems in places where people don't necessarily want it.
And again, we've been talking with
Mark Simon.
Thanks, Mark.
So, I don't think they're going to be able to, I think they've, like, retracted the 29 trees, I think, you know.
We're talking with
Kelsey.
And Kelsey, I know we spoke with you last night.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't come to town specifically to address this issue.
No.
But it's an issue that concerns you.
Yes.
And we're standing in front of a tree that isn't the one-third or one-fourth of the area that is not yet meshed in.
That tree creates, like, 90% of this canopy shade right here in the back part of the park.
And you think that, you haven't been told it's going to go, but that's your suspicion?
It's going to go, yeah, no, it's going to go.
And you know that because?
Because Mr. Fellow here told me so, and he seems like he knows what's going on. He talked to the arborist about this tree in specific, so.
I see.
Yeah.
So,
I think you ought to talk with him.
Well, homeless people don't need shade. They need to move on into the non-existent shelters.
yeah. Exactly.
Housing first, whenever they get the money for the housing.
So,
and then they
wonder why there's a drug problem when they keep getting harassed in the middle of the night to get up and move around. Like, why wouldn't you take some drugs to stay awake if you're constantly being harassed by police officers?
Well, we'll have to check in with your associate over here, you questionable woman. And again, we've been talking with
Kelsey, man.
Thanks, Kelsey.
Yeah.
So, where'd you get the news that this tree is going?
Oh, I don't want to talk at the moment. I'm not good at talking.
No problem. But did you hear it from the arborist directly, or?
No, I heard it from the grapevine.
I got you.
Oh,
thank
okay.
you.
All right.
So, well, I mean, that still could be.
Totally.
There's a list on the internet. And so I found out from like 5 different sources that tree is a major hot.
Thank you, man. So this comes not just from the grapevine, but from a list on the internet, well, which reportedly mentions this tree, I guess. And it's a tree that looks so sort of an expansive tree. It has 4 different sort of extensions that go out in different directions. What kind of a tree is this?
A pine of some sort.
Who?
A pine of some sort? Was it? A Doug? Or what?
It might be a Monterey pine.
Monterey pine?
I don't know. It's definitely a pine of some sort.
It's a pine.
It looks
of some sort.
We have these experts here. We don't know shit about the trees.
That's the thing. None of us are experts. None of us went to lots and lots of school to become tree scientists.
You could become a paid UC expert. Just work harder.
I mean, yeah, if I wasn't lazy sitting in the park under the
tree. You too can cut down trees. Yeah, why not?
I was a Sawyer for a few months. And
your name is?
I'm Ben.
And you're Ben?
I mean, I just cut down what I was told to cut down. I'm no, you know, I never went to class.
You just follow orders.
Well, at that point in my life, that's what I was doing.
Right. In order to pay the rent.
In order to pay the rent.
Right. In order to buy the food.
That vicious cycle, we are all familiar with it.
Indeed. Thank you, Ben. And again, thank you, whatever your name is.
Yes, whatever my name is.
Yes, sorry about that. For those of us who've listened to the tape, we remember your name. For those of us who are doing the tape, we don't. So another grapevine tale from Ben is
that this park is only secured until 2020 as a park. And the thinking is that if in 2020, most of these trees are already gone due to quote-unquote safety issues, then it will be that much easier to bring in the bulldozers and, you know, build a Walmart or whatever they're going to do.
God.
Or another socially useful type of building.
Yeah, or, you know, more student housing. Or
a monument to the chancellor, perhaps?
Yeah, that would be so appropriate.
A golf course, a mini golf course?
Oh, you know what?
A mini golf
20 foot iron fence and like a little 3-hole for the just the, you know, the honchos of the UC to come play golf.
Thank you, Ben.
I mean, you know.
So we're talking with
Ace Backwards. looks like the same old scam. It's just a ruse to clear-cut the park so they can have an excuse to redevelop it into something else. They're claiming they're going to take out half of the 155 trees in the park because they're diseased or dead. But that's a lot of crap.
Have you heard that? I heard that that number was cut back. But is that actually, has it been cut back, extended? What's your own sense of that?
They've had a lot of double talk. They said 29, they said 79, they said they might do something to the stage. So I don't trust them one bit, but there it has been on the table that they have plans at some point to take out half the trees in the park.
Does this have any impact on poor and homeless people in your view?
It makes the park a lot less livable, and it's probably one more step to redeveloping it and running all the street people out of the park.
Will this be showing up in your cartoon?
I no longer cartoon, but I have to go. I have a hospital appointment.
We remember your cartoon.
And I remember you, Robert Morse.
Okay. Norris, thank you.
Keep up the good work.
All right. So I'm down here just off of Shattuck and noticing some chalkings on the sidewalk.
And that was the People's Park, last of the People's Park interviews from a week ago Friday, late March. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. More interviews from Berkeley will continue after this. In a moment, I should say. Don't go away.
Hey politicians, check your positions. Do you work for all of us or for the big bad banks? This plutocracy is no democracy. Ruled by the rich, good gosh, no thanks. Don't trust your hedge funds, don't trust dark money. You leave us homeless and bankrupt. I wonder when you will be moving to your new mansion in the nearest federal pen. You bleed the nation, take a vacation from killing jobs, hoarding gobs of ill-gotten gains. Shift your ambition to abolition. This system's clinically insane. You hold us hostage with stocks and bondage. Basic rights don't mean shite to the shareholding class. If you don't wise up, we just might rise up and plant our feet right in your pants. You kill community with such impunity, but we won't let you get away with this truth decay. We're gonna build a better future, and we're gonna start right now. So politicians, check your positions. Do you work for all of us or for the big bad banks? This plutocracy is no democracy. Rule by the rich, good gosh, no thanks.
And that was David Lippman and a song you can get free on line at his website, DaveLippman.com, and it's Chow Inequality to the tune of Bella Chow, which is an old commie chant. I think I heard it in the 70s being used by some sectarian commie group. But hey, politicians, check your positions. Do you work for all of us or for the big bad banks? And so forth. You can also read the lyrics online. So let's continue with the Berkeley interviews. And let's see where that leads. I may interrupt, clarify, or grumble or comment, and so can you. 427-3772. That's the number line here, the phone line, the number. 427-3772.
All evil requires to prevail is your continued inaction and ignorance in two different colors of chalk.
And I'm looking at chalkings on the street near Shattuck Avenue, which is a sort of the one of the main business avenues in Berkeley, a little further from the campus than Telegraph.
Another one in a different, that's in white and pink. This, and there's orange and green. Cop tases 8-year-old until she's branded, or brain dead, sorry. And then in a third series of two different kinds of chalk, go to copblock.org for the full story. So we have the newspaper of the sidewalk. Another bit of chalking is here. 269 people from the 1st of January to 26th of March were killed by police.net. How are you okay with this? I suppose they mean not that police.net called them, killed them, but that you can find more info at police.net. And here at the corner of Kittredge and Shattuck on the sidewalk, again, more chalking by the same very legible printed hand and multicolored chalk by people citing police.net. And the same figure, since January 1st, 269 people have died by police action. March 26th equals day 85. And it's exciting again, police.net. And nearby is another piece of chalking. One of the pieces of chalking has been erased, it looks like. This one says, on 23rd of March, 15, a Berkeley PD officer, 56, woke me while aiming his pistol at me. He refused to issue any citation. My name is Aaron Spencer. I'm a disabled veteran traveling out of my backpack on a 30% rating. What hope have I for justice? And then another bit of chalking in another direction. All these chalking inside of a square on the sidewalk, three different squares. What hope for any of us when cops caught on film killing unarmed people are never convicted? When an average of three people are murdered by police every day. So we're talking with
Any random person.
And random person, or any random person.
Yep.
I see you are.
And before we hear the random person interview, the website that the chalkings on the Berkeley sidewalk refers to is called CopBlock. One word, small letters, copblock.org. And apparently every week they publish kind of a summary of what reports of police killings, woundings, shootings, abuses around the country, maybe even around the world, with videos and such. And they have a review. A lot of it is video, and so it probably is best advised that folks go check it out themselves. April 3rd is the last entry. Today, of course, is the 5th. And here's an example of a post by Corey Watkins. Open carrying at Canes. And there's a guy carrying a... It looks like a rifle. Maybe it's an automatic rifle or a semi-automatic, or it's hard to tell exactly what kind of a gun it is, and I'm not any gun expert. And there are a couple of looks like police officers in front of Corey, who is spelled with a K and a man. Now I say unique style. He writes, I think it's a he, because in today's age, many people are scared of guns. Thanks to the government brainwashing that's been bestowed upon us about people who carry guns other than cops. But I wish we would see more people armed in our daily activities. As the saying goes, an armed society is a safe society. I don't know if I agree with that, although a lot of people I know strongly disagree with that. Unfortunately, these are often people who want to leave things to the police. So before everyone gets worked up on Corey for cop blocking with an AK, know that he carries a firearm religiously. This isn't something he does only when cop blocking. I'm glad he's trying to smash the stereotype people have of those who carry firearms publicly or openly. It takes a lot of courage to carry an open weapon when you're cop blocking, I guess means cop watching and then putting it on cop block. I'm not sure what state this guy is in. But it's an interesting website. They have shirts, which with the written on the shirts are, "Am I free to go?" Film the police. And here's an example of the kind of things they post. Here's a, it's described as follows. Michael Burns cited again for by Highway Patrol for license plate. Michael Burns, founder of Central Florida Cop Block, has his eighth run-in with law enforcement over this license plate holder and recorded the interaction as usual. He has a YouTube channel. He's not a stranger to the courts, as he wore a Fuck the Police t-shirt into court once, although it says here F the Police, and is looking forward to his day in court, not only for the infraction, but to test the ban on cameras in the courtroom. And here's the video of that. Facing a felony for a Facebook post. Well, let's first of all look at this thing from the Florida Highway Patrol, or listen to it. I can see it. You can't, but you can go online and see it if you want.
Hmm. So. She is. Oh, she had my brother's name. And now she's probably talking about it.
Park.
No.
Yes.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. Why are you pulling me over?
License, registration, insurance, sir.
May I ask why you are pulling me over,
yeah,
first?
Yeah, your tag bracket is illegal around your tag, sir.
No, it's not.
Sure it is.
I've already been to court for it and won.
License, registration, insurance.
You're in a private parking lot pulling me over.
License, registration.
You're not even on a public road.
License, registration.
Are you authorized to pull people over on private property?
Are you in the state of Florida?
I am.
Well, then I'm authorized to pull you over.
For what again?
Your tag.
And on the screen, he's written
my tag violation.
R.A. Drake, badge 1749.
What's your name and badge number?
First of all, license, registration, insurance, and we can go with the rest of the formalities, okay, sir?
Ay, ay, ay. Here, baby, can you hold this for me?
Okay.
Expect a complaint.
Okay.
You're stalking me just because I pointed a camera at you.
I see you over there, sir. Insurance?
That's all I got for you. You can give me the ticket for anything over anything else it is. Oh, the car is insured. You can believe me.
I don't see any proof.
Give me the ticket for it.
And the video being taken by the passenger, a woman with him, has both a picture of he, the driver, and the police officer.
That's what you're talking about. See that black license plate frame?
Mm-hmm.
Every single car that comes out of a dealership with one comes with one. And they use that as an excuse to pull people over. That guy's going to have a bad week. Are we done?
5 minutes later, he writes, "Yes, I assumed
I
he was
know.
Done since
I
it took us under 5 minutes
to
ticket the car."
Hurry.
He ticketed the last.
So I can hear you.
I can hear you fine.
At this point, he goes back to his car. It takes about 15 minutes to finish. "He never witnessed me," the guy writes, "drive on a public road. I was in the McDonald's parking lot so she could get food before her flight. He pulled me over because he witnessed..." Back again with more pictures of, again, through the rearview mirror, and the flashing lights of the squad car. And it's
so we were on the way to the airport. I pulled over.
Anyway, I like this kind of thing. It's much more dramatic, of course, if you can see it.
And he decided to follow me.
So we're going to leave it. But I would encourage people, if they'd like, to take a look at this Cop Block website in order to get a notion of, one, how to handle a video camera, where to go, using both audio commentary as it happens, and then afterward, and this is something I haven't yet learned to do, is put titles on the screen that describe what happened, what was said, the time that was elapsed, the officer's name and badge number, and other useful information. That's good stuff. Again, copblock.org. Copblock.org is the website. And, yeah, that's that. Back to the street interviews.
Are caretaking two doggies.
Yeah, they're my friends.
And what are the names of these pooches?
It's called Dog and Dog.
Dog and Dog.
Yeah, Dog and Dog.
I see. D&D, so to speak.
Yeah.
So I asked you if you had any thoughts about what's cooking on the streets, and you said...
Chicken. Lots of... Oh, yeah. Oh, the cops? Oh, that's bacon. Yeah, the bacon's been cooking out here, I guess.
And has there been anything specific that's happened recently you want to pass on?
Yeah. They like to fucking kick people in the nuts and wake them up.
This is Berkeley.
It's happened to you recently.
Talking.
No, it happened to my friend.
How long ago?
A while ago.
And do you know the name of the cop who did it?
No. But I want to kick him in the nuts while he's sleeping.
Understandably.
Yeah, understandably, because, like, what the hell? If you're homeless, you can't sleep outside. And if the shelters are full, you still can't sleep outside. So you got to stay awake all night, right? So what if you can't stay awake all night? You have to use drugs, right? So it's kind of like they forced my hand to use drugs in a way, so I can stay awake.
Is that why you say stay up on your jacket?
No, that's for me to have confidence in myself. Stay up is a confidence type thing. Got to keep your head up high.
Much solidarity with others on the street, or is it a lone thing?
It's always a one-man thing. You got to do it for yourself.
Well, I see there's a group of folks here. Is it people coming together to some extent? Does it help to, or does it more draw the police?
It draws more the police, because they always wonder what the fuck we're doing.
And just what the fuck are you doing?
Chilling.
You're here. Anything you want to add?
I would like to cook some bacon and eat it.
Do you think that would be healthy?
No.
And yet you would do it anyway.
Yeah.
And we've been talking with?
Random person.
Thank you. Any random person.
Yeah, any random person.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Dude, I haven't even wrote that thing. I'm afraid to write it.
So here's another bit of chalking at Alston and Shattuck. Again on the sidewalk. There is enough for everyone's need, but no one's greed.
Dropout.
Dropout, go ahead.
But it says, this is a sign at the corner of Alston Way and Shattuck, but it says multi-agency service center, free food, which is true. You can get food there. Free showers. There are so many people there now, there's days that you can't get showers. A lot of days they close. But the free clothes washing, that's available to the first 8 or 10 people that go through on a Wednesday. So that's really not true, you know. And then social service counseling, I'd rather smoke a joint. But there's so many things about this.
It also says housing, counseling, and assistance. Has anybody gotten housing from this place?
They shut down a lot of the shelter here and then dedicated to the veterans, which is a great thing to do. But they also, because they get so much more money from that program, from the government, they as far as being out here and being a nobody, you know, the services are harder to get here. There's just been a huge influx of people.
Join the Army. You can be a vet. Now, come on.
Yeah, come back in a box.
Yeah, well, but, that's a minor detail.
But
mental health assessments. Have you been assessed mentally?
I'm good to go, man.
But, what about mental health counseling? Have you been counseled?
I have before, yeah.
And did that help you out?
No, they wanted me to take Ritalin, but I ended up coffee and weed. It works great for me.
Cheaper, probably.
The coffee's just a great way to go.
Now, know, side effects.
But the same thing, they're really leaving people alone here. When'd you get the new recorder, man? You had the little handheld.
I know, they're all falling apart, those old machines. What
you know, I wish a friend of mine was here because he's going down to Santa Cruz. He's going to go down because he wants to work there.
He's got a job in Santa Cruz?
I guess, but you guys would be... you know, I did the whole time I was there, Robert. I worked for 9 months up in... God, I forget the... it's right up at... I forget the neighborhood, Live Oak. And then also, then I camped out at West Cliff for 9 months, and not one time did anybody wake me up or bother me. And I know that's good news.
What year was that?
It was last year. It was last year.
Well, shit. Yeah. Listen, how can I continue my alarmist activity if you're passing on these mellow stories?
Much to your chagrin.
Much to my chagrin.
But it's great to see you, man. Yeah, I'm glad you guys are out here, and I've been watching the thing with the Bearcat. Of course, I go out to Taos in here, and so I know Keith and Abby and all them, and it's just I'm here, man. I'm doing my thing, you know. Dropouts, it's more than just a name.
With a backpack on your back? Sleeping bag.
It's a North Face sleeping bag and a North Face duffel bag. How bad do I really got it, huh? You know, I'm wearing a pair of Clarks. I could have shoplifted a pair of Ecos, but I took the Clarks instead.
There you are.
There you go.
Honest and articulate. The infamous dropout.
That is.
Anything else dropout?
No, what are you guys doing up here today?
Oh, we're just People's Park. They're denuding the trees from People's Park.
Yeah, you know, Michael Delacorte, maybe a few other people with all that showed up, and they're doing it in the section. I don't think there's really going to be trying some kind of hostile takeover going on, but Mike's it, man. Once Mike's gone, the park's gone. It's just a matter of time. You know, here's my point, that the sign in the park says University of California's People's Park, and that's the truth. It is the truth, and I understand the history behind it, but that's the truth, man. That's their shit. That shit,
they're shitting place as well.
It's just a matter of time. Yeah. Their agenda is methodical and beautiful, just like you know, they're in no hurry, man. You know, they're in no hurry.
The deception is very subtle.
There you go. Hey, I'm done talking, man, but it was great to see you.
Thank you, Dropout. Yeah, appreciate it.
Welcome. Jail? I left my weed in my pocket.
Really?
Yeah, cool. You got a light?
Respect or just incompetence?
Yeah, okay, I'll go with the first one.
So what were you jailed for?
I was in jail because I was intoxicated.
Were you intoxicated and bothering people, or were you just intoxicated?
No, I was just intoxicated.
And are you...
I wouldn't bother anyone. I know this guy, but most of the time I stick by myself. Most of the time I'm all by myself. And apparently I was walking down the street, but I wasn't walking in a straight line.
Were you unable to take care of yourself?
I'm always able to take care of myself. I don't drink that much.
Even when intoxicated?
Yes. Usually I get intoxicated and I go lay down. So I'm walking down to my sleep spot. The cop pulls over and goes, "You look drunk." I'm like, "What else do I look like?" Next thing you know, off the jello went.
He was trying to give you a cot and a hot and a hoo-ha-ha.
They didn't feed me at all. Even just now when I just got out like 5 minutes ago, I'm like, "Hey, can I get breakfast?" They're like, "No, you're out of here."
How long were you in jail for?
Since last night somewhere.
A couple hours.
Yeah, I know.
Now, welcome back to the outside.
I haven't been carrying a light since I quit smoking.
They took my lighter and my ID. I'm like, "Oh, thank you." How did you know my name?
Because
I don't tell them my name when I go to jail. I'm like, "How'd you know my name? Like, we saw it on your ID." I'm like, "Can I have my ID back?" I'm like, "Oh, we lost it. I have no ID now."
Right.
Like, no, it's okay, because I didn't have one for like 15 years. It's all good.
That's interesting. Hey, I got to go. See ya.
All right. Would you like to identify yourself, second man, before we leave?
David Bohannon.
Thanks, David.
Might want to get a light again. It's really good weed. It left in my pocket. I'm like, "Yeah."
Yeah, that was another one from Berkeley. Let's listen to a little music. And perhaps your phone calls, 427-3772, is the call-in number here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. 101.3 FM is where you can find us, or freakradio.org.
Yeah.
A chair my prayer asks, but where can searchers seek for it? No chair downtown, nowhere around, no sofa nor settee. And I have found its lack profound when seated I would be. When seated I would be. Search high and low, above, below, no chair arrives in time to ease my aching feet and bones and soothe my troubled mind. I crave a seat to rest my feet, but no one seems to care. A simple thing, perhaps, but true. I truly love a chair. I truly love a chair. I work downtown. I look around. It's not like I don't try. And not as though I'm asking for some chair out of Versailles. A milk carton, a bucket, almost anything will do. My rear end is not fussy. I just need a chair or two. I just need a chair or two. A chair so fair, I ask you, where can such a thing be found? Down at the city council I have noticed chairs abound. The council gets to take a seat, indeed, whenever they please. This anti-sitting law's designed to keep us on our knees, to keep us on our knees. So I propose, in simple prose, we take matters in hand and scatter chairs in happy pairs throughout this chair-free land. I'll make sure there's a chair for you, and in return you'll see my search will finally be through. There'll be a chair for me. There'll be a chair for me. There'll be a chair.
And that was a cut from Carol Denny's album, Unless, of Course, You Die. And the name of the song is A Chair So Fair. It's about the cutback in seating spaces in Berkeley. We have the same problem in Santa Cruz, although more dramatically on Pacific Avenue. Although, interestingly enough, a point that was brought up, and I may have mentioned in previous broadcasts about Monterey, where they also were doing a protest against the sitting ban there, and no police came, there were no arrests, there were no tickets, just a very interesting, angry, lengthy series of statements or urgings from a bar worker in Monterey. A woman who came out who said she was going to, in half an hour, they were going to open the bar, and she asked them to move 5 feet away from her bar, so they were all in front of Walmart's. And two of the individuals who were sitting there said, no, we're here, you know, because this is a public sidewalk, and we have a right to be here. And she spent some time arguing with them, getting angrier and angrier, as though they couldn't understand simple reason. And the point that she didn't follow was they didn't want to be forced from business to business based upon the whim of the business owner from a public sidewalk where they have a right to be and they aren't obstructing anything or causing any problems. And laws that enable this kind of forceful restriction of the public space based upon the whim of a private interest
are simply wrong. And they're also, of course, specifically directed against a class of people who have far less options than the folks going into and out of the bars. And to me, that's a pretty simple reality that doesn't take a lot of intellect or even compassion to understand. But she didn't, and she seemed like an ordinary person, and she was spending a lot of time trying to argue what she thought was a reasonable argument. Perhaps some of it was because I was recording, although towards the end she became irate that I was recording her and saying I had to get her permission. And this is sort of a misunderstanding that a lot of people have. You don't need permission to record people in public places. You do if you are, you know, concealing a recording in a private place where there's what's called an expectation of privacy. This is my understanding. Again, don't have the law in front of me, but I've done it for years, and so many people who have not liked it and who presumably could have taken up the issue, particularly police officers, have never ultimately attempted to stop me either through legal means or through physical force. Although I believe one guy did slap the microphone across the room in the city council chambers, which was unfortunate. Let's hear some more from, I guess we're talking Berkeley still, and this is about a week and a half ago. Touched upon a number of points in Berkeley, as you've heard, People's Park, folks on the street, noting the chalk marks still there, still legible, not washed away by, as they would be in Santa Cruz the next day. Or at least that's been the case with chalk-ins that have happened in Santa Cruz in the last 5 or 6 years. There were three of them, I think, one year after another, by a guy who preferred to remain anonymous, but who kind of talked about it on my show at one point anonymously. But in Berkeley, there have been large marches about police misconduct, and they've actually had forced the city council to take somewhat more than token action, though I think not really controlling action that really reins in their police department or their ambassador hosts. I don't think they have a strong first alarm type thugs patrolling the streets as they do here in Santa Cruz. And, you know, again, why do I call them thugs? Because they are designed to intimidate poor people. People who are not as heavily armed as they are. People who are not as well-to-do as they are, though admittedly, people who take these jobs are not well-to-do. They're probably, you know, on the edge of homelessness themselves, or maybe, you know, certainly not wealthy. But they're serving the interests of those who are, and they're essentially intimidating the rest of the community from exercising what would be their normal right to use the public spaces. And that they don't have that. In Berkeley, that's done by the ambassador hosts and to some extent by the police. But the chalking remains on the sidewalk. It was done, I think, around the time, may have been more recent, but looked like the Black Lives Matter protests did some of that. That's my speculation. Don't know. But there it was. And that's kind of the most direct First Amendment form of expression, which is not just illegal in Santa Cruz, but they have prosecuted people for it. Becky Johnson went to jail for it. And that was 12, 13 years ago, but still. And people do chalk anyway, as they should, and that's good. Because it is clearly a First Amendment right when you chalk with erasable chalk. You're not being vandalizing anything. You know, it's political free speech. And there's still enough people who are a little nervous about it being recognized as that, or at least enough people who the authorities fear may take some action if they are too harsh, that we occasionally get some chalking, but not to the extent as in Berkeley.
Well, it's about 20 to 8. I'm here at People's Park in Berkeley on March 27th.
And going to have to set that up. It reverted to an earlier point in the tape or in the audio file. So let's hear another one from Carol Denny.
You are not my brother, we're nothing alike. I'm driving my Hummer, you're riding your bike. If I were in your shoes, I know what I'd see. If I were in your shoes, I'd wanna be me. It's the song, it's the song, it's the song of the wealthy man. Always right, never wrong. Try to be just like me if you can. It's the song of the wealthy man. You are not my sister, no how and no way. Your troubles won't ever come darken my day. Your fault, you're stuck in a ditch. You should have planned better like me and got rich. It's the song, it's the song, it's the song of the wealthy man. Always right, never wrong. Try to be just like me if you can. It's the song of the wealthy man. I am not your keeper, so get on your knees. And if you want something, you'd better say please. It's best if you flatter obsequiously. I hear you much better if it's about me. It's the song, it's the song, it's the song of the wealthy man. Always right, never wrong. Try to be just like me. To blame. Of course I am a winner. I made up the game. You should have planned better. It's easy to see. Go talk to your broker. Quit whining to me. It's the song. It's the song. It's the song of the wealthy man. Always right. Never wrong. Try to be just like me if you can. It's the song of the wealthy man. A snap of my fingers, they follow like geese. I own the officials, I own the police. The sidewalks are mine and the medians too. So get up and move before I arrest you. It's the song, it's the song, it's the song of the wealthy man. Always right, never wrong. Try to be just like me if you can. It's the song of the wealthy man. When you're poor, well, of course no one listens to you. It's amazing what big piles of money can do. Whatever I say, and if they try to tax me, I faint dead away. It's the song, it's the song, it's the song of the wealthy man. Always right, never wrong. Try to be just like me if you can. It's the song of the wealthy man. Raise a glass to the rich, 'cause they're better than you. Better shod, dressed, connected, and well insured too. Money may not buy love, as the songs always say, but it buys politicians, and they're here to stay. It's the song, it's the song, it's the song of the wealthy man. Always right, never wrong. Try to be just like me if you can.
Carol Denny, Song of the Wealthy Man, last cut on Unless, of Course, You Die. Well, more from Berkeley coming up. This, again, a week and a half ago, walking about the streets. There is an encampment, a literal encampment, at the post office, which was designed to stop them from the Berkeley authorities or the federal authorities or both, or the landlord who's, I assume, wasn't even rented. I assume it was federally owned property, from destroying the Berkeley post office, which is quite a big building and not much of an appreciator of architecture myself. But there are those in Berkeley who did. I think it's a historic building. And there are some folks who've been there for a number of months protesting and garnering community support for keeping the post office. Let's hear some of that.
I still love Berkeley, man.
We got a long report from Dropout. Thank you, Dropout. And we're heading down to the post office encampment, where I guess people have been there since November trying to protect the post office as a historic building. And according to Dropout, people can sleep there, aren't hassled anymore, or something to that effect.
Somewhat periodically.
And a lot of detail from Dropout about his experiences back in the back 40, as it used to be called, before the Page Smith Community House was built and before the Homeless Community Resource Center became the Homeless Services Center, or the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I like to call it. His halcyon days with Karen Gillette when she was running the place. Now we have a woman named Janine Thomas doing that. And, yeah, that was his, he had a perspective of drugs were being used differently then. There was meth of a different kind, but it was good meth or good speed. And when your stuff was stolen, they rifle through your stuff and steal, but they would leave your camping gear. Now everything gets taken. That's his perspective. Also, he and the other guy we just talked with were saying that they are finding Santa Cruz increasingly oppressive and difficult, which I suppose is the purpose and the message being sent out by the city council, under pressure from, or covertly and supportive and glad to have an excuse to create anti-homeless laws that maybe partially show. I've just gotten a Public Records Act request granted by the Parks and Rec, or I should say by the police department. I'm still waiting for the Parks and Rec stuff, indicating that there's not as many stay-away orders. And this is my vague estimate, as there were this time last year. This is stay-away orders, of course, are these orders that police can issue independently of any kind of standard. If they can give an infraction ticket to you in a parkish, park and rec-controlled zone, then they can give you a stay-away order. And half the time they do, and half the time they don't. And there's no indication in the law, or in any police manual that I've seen, as to when and how they should distribute these fine stay-away orders. Now we're passing the post office, which has a big flyer on it that's not yet been torn down. And regarding the stay-away orders, I did do a little research into the Parks and Rec recent stay-away orders. We've been, some of us Huff activists, are making regular trips to the city council offices after we are able to get Parks and Rec to, they won't give us a summary of their tickets, but they are willing to give us these hundreds of tickets that they've issued in the last year or two, and dozens, scores, in the last month or two. And it appears, as I've mentioned before, that there's a, in this tape I say there seemed to be less than a year before issued by the police department. I haven't double-checked that. That's important, and that's why Berkeley and support Berkeley attempts to restore their own rights. But in we're still trying to some of us Huff activists will still be going to but it seems pretty clear, as I mentioned before, that
95% of these citations are issued to people with homeless addresses, which is to say 115 Coral Street, the address of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, the word transient, a general delivery post office box. And probably, we don't, although I don't include these in my estimate, folks who give out-of-town addresses who are given tickets for camping or being in the park after dark. I suspect these are homeless folks or travelers without means to stay in costly hotels or who don't have connections with people who are housed in Santa Cruz, but who still are, they may have connections with other people in the community, and they may have connections where they can't actually get a place to stay, but they are, they may be visiting and so forth. And what you get here is a clear indication of who these tickets are designed to target, which is people who are homeless, unhoused, outside. And you also get an indication of the kinds of crimes that are being used as a justification for the stay away orders. Any infraction crime, even before you're convicted of it or charged in court, is a basis for these stay away orders and has been for a year and a half, with this situation reaching a possible intensification at any time when the new law went into effect in February, which means they can do it not just for a day stay away, but for a week, a month, a year, depending on how many times you've gotten an infraction ticket of any kind on any Parks and Rec controlled area. And I know this may sound like the same old song to folks, but it's such a unique law in Santa Cruz. I'm just thinking that perhaps the fact that we've talked about it, there's been some public outrage around it at City Council, though the Bearcat protests have siphoned off a lot of protest. Although they're talking about militarization, Bearcat activists with SCRAM, most of them have had little to say about the day-to-day militarization that impacts the homeless, which is to say, you're treating the homeless like the town is under martial law at night, and there's a curfew for the homeless, in essence, on almost all the property that they no one else is using, but that they use to try to survive in. This is not of interest, apparently, to SCRAM activists, at least not worth talking about, most SCRAM activists, most of the time. And I can understand people focusing on the Bearcat issue, and that's fine. But the fact that it, well, that's a whole long issue that I've talked about and will continue to talk about. I've still got no new information about any effective focus on even that issue by this group for the last, well, since the City Council meeting of 2 weeks ago, when they were essentially sidelined, turned down. They accepted somewhat passively this whole process of exclusion from the council, exclusion from the civic auditorium, and really exclusion from the agenda, since the issue of rescinding the Bearcat was not on the agenda. And you say, well, it came up by a motion from Micah Posner. And yes, it did, but if it were on the agenda, there would have to be some real discussion of the arguments pro and con by the staff, and that never showed up, because it was framed instead of how do we use the Bearcat. And there was no real discussion of that either. They simply implemented, it seemed to me, pretty much the same guidelines that the police department, through Chief Vogel or Chief Vogel's personal position on how to use the Bearcat, happened with his own simply assertions. Maybe he talked to the city manager, maybe he talked to the mayor, but he didn't talk to the community in any open forum. He just simply announced them, and the ultimate thing that was voted looked pretty much like what he had written. And there's a question in my mind. I'm still working on the issue as to whether there was a shift in that policy between the time he announced it, the police chief announced it in January, of we will not be using this Bearcat against nonviolent protesters except under this, that, and the other circumstances. And when that was essentially reaffirmed in March at the council meeting two weeks ago, but whether there was some intervening situation where they changed their policy and removed that for a while, and therefore it was regarded as a victory two weeks ago when it was reaffirmed. I didn't regard it as a victory to do this back in December when it was rammed through the consent agenda. And going off on this riff, which I'm hoping that at least some of the audience is following, around the armored personnel character carrier, and with character, of course, which is also known as the Ballistic Engineered Armored Response Counterattack Truck. What a mouthful. I can never remember that and probably have no reason to, except it's far more dramatic and less friendly than Bearcat. I'm concerned about activists getting some real action done on real militarization issues, including the Bearcat. And I will continue to press these issues. And we'll be talking about this probably a little bit later in the show. But right now, back to Berkeley, back to the post office situation. And you'll hear some of that.
We demand that the USPS stop sales proceedings of people's property at 2000 Alston Way, that's the post office location, and delist the property. That negotiations with the city of Berkeley to fund or find suitable use for the currently unused space inside begin immediately, that more postal workers be hired so that waiting times at 2000 Alston Way are significantly reduced, and that U.S. mail delivery does not happen late in the evening, that the postal counter at Staples in Berkeley be closed. And I don't know how much of that actually has happened, but there's not only a few people in sleeping bags laid out in the area near the entrance of the post office, which is a broad kind of veranda, but there's also a large tent here off to the right of the post office. It says, first they came for the homeless, in coalition with the Berkeley Police Office Defenders, we the people insist that the United States Post Office is a vital part of our public infrastructure, and this post office is occupied by the owners. And it looks like a small residence. Morning. I'm doing an interview for Free Radio. You want to say what's cooking and how things are going?
They're moving along pretty good. They had a court hearing yesterday, and apparently the judge, in order to the developers, he said that they had to rescind all their previous things and start all over again, or that, and then he would dismiss the suit about the people. Otherwise,
what's the suit about the people? Tell us about that.
About keeping the Berkeley Post Office open, keeping it as a historical mark, keeping it as a community resource and stuff, and they won't be able to sell it because it's ours. It's the public's, not the corporations or the other entities.
And so you've gotten a ruling from a judge that states they have to do what in order to go where?
In order to proceed or to try to sell the building, they have to rescind their previous stuff as far as not allowing public hearings about the building and stuff like that. They put it, and then they would have to start the process all over again, which would take them 18 more months to get where they are right now.
Now, will they be able to reach the same conclusion, or is there an actual, will there be a product if they start holding public hearings? Is another outcome something that actually is possible?
Oh, yeah, it's possible. It's real possible. Once the city, the city council and the mayor's office and the rest of the people in Berkeley have a chance to weigh in on the fact, sure, it's a real possibility.
Could be stopped.
Yeah, that it could be stopped. It would just take them 18 months to get to the point where they are now. So in order for them to dismiss the city's lawsuit, they would have to turn around and rescind everything and start from the beginning again, or else he's going to allow the city to proceed with their lawsuit again.
Now, you've been here for how long? I should say this encampment has been here for how long?
This has been here for since November 1st right now.
Of 2014.
2014, yeah.
And do you attribute the presence of this encampment, does it, you think, have any impact did it have any impact on the either the court decision or the behavior of the company that wanted to sell the property?
I believe, or buy the property. I believe it's had an impact. I believe it shows that we care about it, and people are constantly coming by asking for information about it. Shows the community support, and what's happening. Sure, it has a big impact. The encampment, sure. Although we call it a protest, because if you go and call it an encampment, then they're going to, the police may try to shut it down or something like that.
Now, so, as a protest, do you have the right to set up a tent and sleep overnight on public property? Aren't you lodging in violation of 647E of the state penal code?
I think it is, but I think they're overlooking it. I think they're turning around. Beyond that, it's a public building. It's public property. It belongs to the public. It belongs to you, me, and everybody else. So, yeah.
Tell that to the hate man.
to the hate man. But yeah, it's a public.
The hate
property.
Man, of course, is facing 647E charges in Oakland for being in People's Park during the day.
Yeah. I'm aware of that, but I think because he says it's an encampment, or that he presents it as an encampment. If he presented it as a protest, because you have a right to assemble, you have the right to protest and stuff.
I think he was just sitting on the. Well, I don't know if he was just sitting on the. I don't know the details of it. OSHA Newman's the attorney covering it, but
yeah.
And it's interesting in Santa Cruz. Whatever you call it, it doesn't really make any difference. This is up in Berkeley, of course, but in Santa Cruz, I'm remembering activists who set up protests on the sidewalk that were then dismissed as encampments when they were obviously protests. They were uncomfortable. They didn't draw many other people to come. This is a, I'm thinking of one that actually happened 20 years ago and preceded the downtown sitting law in 1994. It was done after a court decision on the so-called Tobe case. A lower court ruled that you camping for homeless people was a right because arresting them under anti-camping laws, particularly when you had no shelter available for most of them, was a form of violates the right to travel. It has nothing to do with shelter in some of this stuff. It just has to do with the right to, you know, to be outside. Some places, the right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment, the right to be given due process, or I should say a substantive due process, which means certain basic rights of privacy and so forth. I may be getting a little of this wrong. Feeling a little murky this morning. But in any case, protests was not, saying you had a protest in Santa Cruz was not good enough. However, it is true that if you get a significant portion of the community on your side, as, for example, the Occupy movement did, then, and you show up in sufficient numbers, then suddenly the rules change. And that is important. And people who are law freaks and get all upset because they say, well, you know, you're not applying the law equally here, you know, but that's the reality of it. Just that's why you need power as well as, lawyers are very nice, and buying politicians, I suppose, helps if, as the Song of the Wealthy Man points out. But the power most people have, the power that we have as renters and workers and human beings generally, is in our numbers, and in our willingness to trust each other, come together, and operate for common causes. And that is a harder row to hoe, particularly when those who have a lot of power, money, land, politicians, lawyers, guns, nuclear weapons, they are well-organized, well-focused, and insatiably greedy, or paranoid, or determined to maintain the status quo, or to expand it even. So, turn to Free Radio, by the way, in case you just tuned in, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org, down in beautiful Santa Cruz, looking for a transmitter site. Call me if you have a tree near your house or near a power source that we can plug into, and we need it soon. 423-4833 is the number to call off air to reach me to pass on any info of that kind, or if you want to pass on information about different kinds of concerns you have, you want to be on the air on a show, If you want to comment privately on something you heard on the air, 423-4833 is the number. But back to the Berkeley Post Office struggle, where the community, I don't know how much more liberal they are. I think they're just some of them are more active, though apparently not around People's Park, as we found when we went up there a week ago. And I, interestingly enough, when I put onto the People's Park email list the question, why didn't anybody show up, I was not able to get any kind of an answer, which is disheartening, perhaps, or just bewildering, or I'm still looking for it anyway.
I know OSHA quite well, but the idea is that if you present, he isn't putting up no thing that what he's protesting about. He's not letting anybody, if he is protesting.
Have you been following his case pretty closely?
I've known him for a number of years. I haven't been up to see him lately because I'm tied up down here and doing some other things with myself.
You made some interesting points. I'd like to find out exactly. I don't know the specific facts around his arrest and what the charges.
We're talking about Mark the Hate Man, who actually was profiled in the Street Spirit newspaper with a new issue, which, by the way, should be coming to Santa Cruz shortly, which you can find in the public library and also online at thestreetspirit.org. I think that's it. You can also buy it from a homeless person near you sometimes. There aren't many of our vendors still remaining, but occasionally. Also, it's available at the Sub Rosa Cafe, Street Spirit newspaper. And you have local writers, Linda Lemaster, head of the Ancient Homeless Issues Task Force, co-founder of Housing Now in Santa Cruz. And she may be on the show today to talk about the City Council's approval of the 10-year, I don't know, planning for the homeless, another one of those homelesses. End homelessness in 10-year plans, which I'm so disgusted with, and which she may give us a more positive perspective on, as she often does. Anyway, she's going to be writing in Street Spirit. It's going to be available. And the Hate Man was featured there. The Hate Man is a guy who's the furthest thing you can imagine from hating people. But he uses a process when he meets someone, asks you to tell me you hate me, because he wants you to get all your aggression out initially. And people, although they don't admit it, may, like racism, have a lot of xenophobia or class prejudice or fear of people with, you know, who look shabby. And to get it out, and he does it by having you push, at least he used to. You lean your hand against his hand and you push at him, indicate a form of aggression, and once you get that out of the way, you can get on to the other emotions, which are more important and more positive and more productive and more comfortable too. And that's why he's called the Hate Man, because get your hate out first. And he was busted for apparently being in People's Park. They claimed he was lodging in People's Park during the day. And I really should examine that case more closely, but I'm told there was no particular encampment there, well, at least has not been mentioned in any of the discussions I've had with his attorney, OSHA Newman. And OSHA is currently appealing the law under which he is, as the law that was used here in Santa Cruz, too, in which he was arrested. It's a misdemeanor code from the state penal code called 647E, which was used against the Occupy movement, although no one was taken to court there, and then the year before against the Peace Camp movement, where Ed Fry and Gary Johnson and some Huff members and 70 homeless people, 20 to 70, very different times, slept in front of the county building, and then were ticketed and driven away under the 647E law, they claiming that they were lodging. And some of them were sleeping there at night, if that's lodging. Some of them were simply sitting there with protest signs, and it's become much harsher in Santa Cruz, as most of the regular listeners know, in terms of protests, at least if you look at the precedents that were established in currently the no trespass zone all around the county building, all around the city hall, all around the police station, all around the library, all around the levee, in every park at night. It's increasingly looks like the kind of militarization that I would hope groups like coalitions like SCRAM and the groups that make them up are interested in combating. I think many of them are. It's just they don't want to offend the liberal politicians or alienate possible swing votes on the city council. The trouble is, unless you speak clearly on the issues, unless you come down in a way that's intelligible to the general public on a deeper level, you will be faced with, and they, as I think they've found, folks who are who have the power, they use it, and then they say, let's move on to the next issue. But definitely the Bearcat issue is not over, particularly if they try to pull it out and use it once it comes. But I'm afraid it looks to me like I don't see any indications it's continuing right now in terms of demands on the city agencies or even an initiative to stop it or recalling the council members who voted for it or seeking a referendum on the vote. They could have done all these things, and none of them have been attempted. They seem to have a fairly large organization. They could have tried that, as some organizations have done in the past, usually without success, but sometimes with success. But they didn't. And that makes me think it's... Well, when you're dealing with liberals, if they can't persuade the politicians, you often get, first they'll exclude the radicals, and they'll try to tone down the protests. They'll talk to the politicians behind closed doors, and then they'll go home if they don't get where they get what they want, because they've abandoned the sharper edge. Anyway, here's a phone call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert, this is Linda.
Hey, Linda.
I heard you were talking about the lodging law, so I picked that moment to call you.
Good.
I want to mention something else first.
Okay.
I'm getting from what you're saying about the Bearcat and nothing new, that you haven't read about what happened outside of Abby's home when she and her friend got home from whatever, shopping and dinner, I think she said, to be greeted by cops with their guns drawn and kind of tense police. So.
Definitely have not heard about that. Please give us a breaking report.
Well, I read about it on Facebook, so this is just hearsay. And my interpretation on top of it, but it sounded like the neighbor was complaining that the people in this certain household, I guess Abby's household, take up all the space for parking, and I don't know what else they said to the cops, but it sounded like they provoked the system that would send cops out to their door to be upset before they got there. And so... Abby was outside her house, and a police officer demanded her ID, and she wasn't ready to share it. She didn't know what's going on. She's looking at a gun. I would have been in shock. I might have given my ID, but I would have been in shock in that situation. Anyway, so it unfolds a little more. The two other people in the household were impacted from the sound of it. I just don't think this is the end of the Bearcat. I think it's going to get more serious. I think they may get around to understanding that the police need their insight and our insight in order not to do shit like this.
Now, when did this happen as far as your Facebook account?
Last night.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Abby...
I imagine if you look on Funabombs, you can see that on the Facebook.
Oh, I have to take a look.
See your note.
It's hard to access Food Not Bombs from this computer here, and I'm glad you're calling in.
Oh.
I mean, it's hard to access Facebook.
Yeah.
And I may try to call Keith and see if he can give us an update. Keith McHenry and Abby Samuels are strong Food Not Bombs activists in Santa Cruz who were also the first to publicize the Bearcat. Perhaps John Malkin was as well, and so was Huff. But they put out extensive flyers with a picture of this armored personnel carrier, and they led the protests largely. They fed the protests largely at the city council meetings on December 9th and January 13th, where the council was on the 9th. It was disrupted. On the 13th, there was a lot of strong feeling, and protests since then have been, people have given strong statements.
You said December 9th?
Yes, December 9th and January 13th are the two protest dates. And people have given strong statements since then, but the real temperature has been cooled by a broader organization led by Sherry Connable called SCRAM, which seems to have scrammed, but maybe not. Now, you say, as this happened last night at Abby's home, police were called because they didn't like the parking situation?
Parking, noisy neighbor. I don't know. It's a neighbor complaint. I don't think they show up with guns drawn normally just because a neighbor says, I don't like how my other neighbor... Robert, excuse me, and I got to go back to my house and shut off the radio because it's too cold out here where I thought I'd be able to talk to you.
Sure, why don't you call
just
me back?
Just take a second. No, just take a second.
Okay,
sorry,
I'll wait.
I won't get a chance to call you back.
Yeah, you know what I wanted?
Can you hear yourself?
I can hear you.
Oh, good.
What I'd like to do, though, if I can, Linda, is... Oh, there
yeah.
we go. Now I can hear myself 3 minutes ago or whatever that lag is. For folks who are, you know, don't know, if you're calling in, always turn down your radio or your computer because there's a lag and it's confusing to everybody.
Yeah.
So I know, Linda, you want to talk about the... Why don't you do that? Although I'm kind of
you
eager.
You want me to talk about this?
Well, I'm actually eager to contact Keith about this issue, but I did mention this other item, and I asked you in the past to call in, and we have talked a little about this, what I call, continuum of care updated stuff.
Yeah.
And you, I'm going to give you a chance to say something about it, and also what the city council did, if you followed what they did a week before last on Tuesday, I guess it was.
I got to hear their posturing at the city hall, but I don't think what the city did is any more significant than, say, the city of Watsonville, even Scott Valley. I was at the whole thing, hearing at the city of Capitola.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
tiny turnout by comparison.
Right, and the Board of Supervisors.
This is what I want to share about this. So a large coalition, even a few homeless people, myself, Christopher Andrade, a couple other people, Sylvia Karras as an advocate, people I respect were there as well as the people that have a stake or a self-interest in how this plan comes out. Of course, they were there, county, nonprofits. But it really had businessmen like Jerry Merrill. It was a real coalition for once. This is the third of these strategic plans that are supposed to help this county, in this case, that they happen all over the country, called Continuum of Care, to get a grip on how they're going to deal with homelessness. And the reward is you get HUD money if you fill these things out. Well, because we were able, and I have to acknowledge Don Wayne, myself, I'm trying to pat myself on the back here, and other key people, insisted that this plan get opened up to the public, to the community, that people at least know what's going on and might want to participate. And finally, people were responding to that. That's never happened before. This is the first continuum of care grant request required for money from HUD, I'm saying. Strategic plan throughout Santa Cruz County about homelessness that everyone participated in. And as a result, there's a lot of things in it that have nothing to do with what HUD said in advance they'll give us money for, like roofs or whatever. If you got the building, they'll give you a new roof. This is an example. Every year it's a little different. Every year it gets more complicated legally. But Santa Cruz has always scored well. We apply for the money every few years. We don't always have to do this plan, but it is this plan that has started all over the country. People having to do that every other year census of homeless people. HUD picked that up. Santa Cruz did that voluntarily and was one of the first places to try to literally do a head count, don't think about it too long or it'll seem absurd, of their homeless population. You can get patterns even out of a by definition incomplete survey. You can see patterns. You could help people if that's your purpose. So anyway, like I was saying, Santa Cruz got ahead of the curve when trying to create some way to count where the need was, where the people are. And now the whole country has to do it every other year to get HUD money. That's a different thing than the plan. The last time they did a plan like this, it was a 10-year plan, which, of course, lasted 13 years because it's held by a thicket of bureaucracy. It's not permeable, let's say, for the people. So now we have a new one. What is fundamentally different is that the plan talks to the community we talk to ourselves, as it were. There are a lot of things in it that are immediate needs that HUD has no interest in funding. And so I've been stumping, trying to go around telling everyone, including these cities, just to prove the plan, that if you adopt, if you embrace this plan, or even just its intention, you're embracing a plan to do new things to solve problems that already exist, emergency problems among homeless people, not just to build the infrastructure so we can house, you know, give more studio apartments or whatever, the developmentally disabled, or 1 year it was the, only 1 year, and all these years I've been involved, it was for people trying to recover from drugs and alcohol. We can include, local people can include their own thing in that, but sometimes HUD says, this is who we want you to use the money for, because all over the country, this is the data we got. So we achieved that because in Santa Cruz County, all these so-called subgroups are in a bind, because we don't have a functional infrastructure here, in my opinion, for people who fall into homelessness, or even to prevent them. Since Paul Rendell left town, we don't have an infrastructure of eviction relief, it was called here. We don't have that anymore. So we just have one of the ugliest, you're fucked if you're homeless, entry programs. And this plan, at least if you read it and you believe it, is an opportunity to change that. It's an opportunity to deal with RV parking, for example, as mentioned. Things that HUD doesn't care less. They assume that all of these regions have an emergency shelter, and they go from there. Well, shelter system. It has a capacity for 30 people in Watsonville, maybe 35 now, I don't know. And it has, and these are not all public resources, by the way. They include private resources, like Jesus, Mary, and Joseph Shelter, New Life Center, when they take in somebody that's not there with a contract with the state, you quit it too. Was unanimous. Everyone on the city council, all the board of supervisors, endorsed it, which is good. And it numbers. So now that they have endorsed this plan that includes helping people that there's no money to help, I want to see it happen. And thank you for giving me room to try to get this out. I'm not at my best.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Listening to Linda LeMaster, head of the long ago Homeless Issues Task Force, co-founder of Housing Now in Santa Cruz? In Santa Cruz.
Yes, Housing Now Santa Cruz. Housing
right.
And it's an honor of Mitch Steinberg.
Right. You know, I'm looking at this article, for those who are interested, in the Santa Cruz Weekly, or the Good Times Weekly, or whatever they're calling it. I guess it's the Santa Cruz Weekly section of the Good Times Weekly. It's called Closer to Home by Patrick Dwyer. It's called All In Toward a Home for Every County Resident. Ha, ha, ha. With housing first policies.
Yeah.
With supposedly the intention of getting 1,000 people into per years and...
New permanent housing.
And, yeah, without any kind of indication of where this funding is actually going to come from. I guess you're suggesting... I guess I had some questions while you were talking. To me, it's more, you know what my thoughts are on this. Those who don't know my thoughts
you
are...
Think I'm crazy?
This is a... No, I don't think you're crazy. I think you tend to, you know, put hope in agencies that you shouldn't be putting hope in, or you think that somehow people will come together and they're going, you know, headlined or dismissed. That's my problem with that. But, you know, let me ask you the questions that last 15 years, I think maybe longer. The continuum of care, which was doing its, you were going to their meetings regularly and
still do.
What money has actually come in the past that have helped homeless people directly from any of these plans or projects? Give me some specifics.
Okay. I'm going to overgeneralize.
Say that again. I cut you off.
I'm going to overgeneralize in order to get a whole answer out. And I don't want to put real people's names out like this without their okay. But every year, HUD sends a couple $1 million here. That's an average. It has been going down for the past probably since the Heart Act went into effect. At least the past few years, maybe four. Before, it was always going up. Now that we have the Let's Kill the Poor People Congress, the funding for HUD is going down, and that means less money for vouchers, which is a different program run by the housing authorities around the country, and less money for the continuum of care. The continuum of care is a mechanism so that HUD has a legal tool with which to...
I mean, I am interested in the... in the personal... No, go ahead.
Almost everyone that lives at CASA.
So I don't know if it's 100, I don't know if it's 50 that you save has helped over 1,000 homeless people. Specifically rent is what I'm looking at. And I don't need an exact figure. I just want a ballpark estimate.
I can't do that for you, but I can tell you this if you let me get it out. All the money that's coming in from HUD has to house people who have been homeless. I'm talking about the continuum of care money that comes to us through HUD. There's a lot of leveraging going on. Somebody that can deal with numbers can get this as a fixed number for you. I can't. But all of that money either goes to rent or goes to what you might call as a... What do they call it? A word for this in the bureaucracy. It's like it goes to your house manager for your rent. If you have the kind of disability or you need the kind of support system where you can't physically pay it, it's still dedicated to your keeping your room or your house or your studio.
And how much money would you say that is over the last 10 years?
Well, I said before, every year, the average looking over time is a couple million a year.
Okay, so we're talking about maybe $20 million over the last 10 years.
Or so, yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
There's also a little plumb down and it doesn't fit this annual cycle.
Okay, so $20 million over the last 10 years, and you say that's helped at least 1,000 homeless people. Try not to interrupt me. I'll try not to interrupt. I have to interrupt you, I admit, because I'm trying to focus this conversation. $20 million have paid rent for... How many people would you say? I'm trying to understand, see how effectively this money is being spent.
Well, without real numbers, with these generalities, how can you discern that? You know, are they going to slumlords and come in and kick the tenants?
Well,
way to come to that answer.
Well, I just know that if you or someone else has been going to these meetings regularly and looking at their annual reports about how much money is going into this fund, and also, I mean, somebody must, hopefully, is monitoring how many homeless people are benefiting from this, then we can get some sense of whether this is poverty pimpery extraordinaire or some, you know, a mixture of some actually positive result. That's what I'm trying to figure out here, and I'm frankly, it's hard to figure from what you're telling me.
How you listen, because you keep doing this 1,000 people thing.
Well,
I've got to
ask the question again. I've got to ask the question because you keep going. It feels like you're not really answering it. You're trying to answer more broadly the issue, but not that particular question. That's all. Well,
allow me to clarify that.
Okay.
I'll try to answer your questions, but I can't do the numbers you want. Will you allow me to clarify what you misquoted?
Well, you can always clarify, Linda. I want to give you a little time to do that, and then we'll kind of roll on. I'll try and get a hold of...
I don't need time to do
it. I'll try and get a hold of Keith and Abby and see what we can figure out what's going on with the Food Now Bomb situation, which sounds rather, you know, shocking, and I appreciate your bringing that up. Go ahead.
Backed out?
Go ahead.
Okay. What I told you was, in one particular year, one particular provider, which is Paul Brindell, whom you know, helped at least 1,000 people not lose their housing. And you took that 1,000 people to mean the whole total people helped in the county by this stream of money. And that's not what I said. And sadly, I have to say, I don't know what the correct number would be.
You know, maybe you could use your contacts, Linda, to find out what that number is. I think it's the significant number, frankly. And I'm glad you clarified that, and you're quite right. I misunderstood you when you talked about, you know, Brindell's program, he's with the Community Action Board, and he helped set up the phone system. Helped set up the phone system for the, you know, for homeless folks and folks who are poor, even, you know, to get an answering service. And that's, you know, and he's done some positive things. He has also required sit-ins in his office to get some other things done, but that's another story. you know. But in fact, we don't have the real figures here. You don't have them at hand. But if you can get them or you can get some more information, I would be very interested because I'm frankly very skeptical about this, and I would like to have my either skepticism confirmed or shot down or something in the middle, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm the wrong person for all the parts of what you'd like there because, you know, I don't want to undermine what you're saying, but I think you're going to be surprised. And I can't remember proper names and numbers of things like that.
Well, you know these people, and you go to these meetings.
And I know what they've done, and I have an idea of getting help, but I can't translate it to what you want.
So, then we'll leave it. That's fine. If you can't do it, you can't do it. That's fine. You do what you can do. Go ahead.
Just like you look up how many people get tickets, you can find out how many people get housed or get a month of help or get a quarter of a year of help. That's data that they collect. That's what HUD means.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I just can't remember that shit in my brain.
I mean, you know, I've asked you the question as in sort of different forms throughout the years, and I... you know, I mean, that's the kind of evidence that I think people need to have, and I, you know,
and it's available.
For those who are close to it, as you are, and you're certainly closer
to
it. For those who are closer to it than you know I am, I think it might be appropriate, and maybe not. Anyway, is there something else you wanted to talk about?
Yeah. No, but I would like before you cut me off to remind people that there is maybe a sixth of this plan that has just been approved by all the municipalities in the county unanimously. It doesn't get any funding from HUD, Continuum of Care, and needs our attention because it needs to be integrated into this, quote, mainstream, end quote, and the other laws that decide these policies. It needs to be funded.
A lot of stuff needs to be funded, no question about it.
If we want homeless people off the street so our neighbors aren't shooting at them, we need to take this personally.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just a question of whether you want to pay a lot of attention to these particular groups you're paying attention to or not. I don't know.
Well, whether you attend to them or not, if you see them,
you're talking about them, you're right about them.
Maybe you can help get one RV place to park.
Maybe.
You know, where it's illegal now.
Yeah.
You don't have to embrace the whole deal to help them. And I don't want people thinking that you...
Even consider funding stuff. That might be helpful for people to be aware. Those are necessary areas to focus on. But again, doing it through this... I don't know. Anyway, I think we've talked about it. Let's... again, if, you know...
It was on their agenda.
Probably. And then this other one, you want to repeat that? Bye-bye.
Well, the moonshine smiled out on the face.
Ordinances 6.0 get $10.
Oh boy, sometimes 6 hours.
And as you might imagine, you're still listening. We were there on, I guess it was Tuesday, and we're going to be coming back and frankly being critical of some behaviors of John. And if I have the date right, 31st of March. And I was also there to pick up accounts from homeless people, but other things were happening. They were armed. May have mentioned they don't seem to have given no account yet of any stay-away order of more than a day. Well, they have been giving a day stay-away orders quite with some frequency. Let's now hear the library's...
Talking with Jason Whip.
And Jason, as well as...
Serena Tom.
Access to... information about any of the homeless shelters in the area, so we decided to camp by the river in our tent, which seemed like right side of the river, far side of the river.
How long had you camped there before you were, should we say, visited? You get a copy of that.
Serena Thompson.
Thanks, Serena. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you very much.
So we have John here opening the library with no traffic back, and it's about 10 to 10. Morning. So often John and the other security guards threaten you and say, we're calling the police. And certainly any citizen, including a first alarm security guard, can call the police.
However, will the police respond? Are they interested in making a major issue out of someone sitting on the steps that isn't bothering anyone, or on the grass because John himself decides he doesn't like the way that looks? I have to deal with a person in a position of authority with a uniform and a weapon at his side, as John had. Now, for me, I'm not outside. I'm not homeless. I'm not facing this kind of stuff. But if you have friends, if you have witnesses, if it's obviously ridiculous, you can make whatever choices you need to. Good morning.
Oh, really?
So, that's just my thoughts for morning. Has anybody been harassed by John that wants to talk about it?
It's Mary Way.
Did he intimidate you into leaving?
Yeah, he did.
See, that's what these people are doing, and it's difficult to resist. You're not to be criticized for leaving, but we're trying to find ways to resist that.
Well, my honest opinion about the whole circumstances is that he doesn't... so intimidating. He can try to be a more human circumstance, but he's already made up his mind that we're just the way we are. And he is another employee that does not have to be once. I mean, this doesn't make sense. He thinks that as long as he's a citizen, yeah, he can act whatever way he wants. But he's just a civilian just like the rest of us.
What's your name, if you want to say?
Joseph.
And Joseph, when did this incident happen?
Here. That's correct.
And yet you're here today.
The reason is because he's not going to stop me from coming in. I know he would like to stop me from coming in, but that's hearsay or theirsay. In fact, just while we were talking, I mean, what it was told to me that he was a veteran, but not of the U.S. vet. The deal is he should be a little more... sympathetic, but he's not.
No question.
There is a nastiness about the circumstances that he's determined in thinking that we're just another vagrant hostile.
We saw him, yes. Any other experiences people have had? So everybody else has been okay with John. There's been no problem. That's good.
I always got something to say to you, but you can't be cutting me off all the time.
If it's about John. We're talking about the security guard.
I'm talking about the whole John is a part of a larger problem.
Right. No, I'm talking specifically about the library today. But
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. Forced to move on, that's one thing. Secondly, we're concerned about John and other security guards who seem to be, there are some reports of some harassment instances happening. So
from the library security guard?
Yes, like from the general. Yes.
Which one is John?
John is a large man. Here he is. That's John right there. There he is. Turn around. Take a look.
I saw him.
Advise people that, well, if someone's trying to come through, of course, it's good to let people through. No question about it. But John was doing this while the doors were locked about 10 minutes ago. Within a few minutes of opening up. But what you needed to say, John, was, can you move by the time the doors are open? And that would have been a reasonable thing to say.
You don't get to interpret how the law is done.
There wasn't at the time that you harassed these people. We're repeating ourselves, John.
The people in there tell him to move those, tell them to leave.
Then he has to say, I'm fragrance-free facility. Is that what you're looking at?
What would that entail, fragrance-free facility?
I'm not sure.
Daryl Blair.
Hey, Daryl.
Hi.
A former
now,
DJ.
The, let me gather my thoughts again. Let's start
there
it
may
off.
Be discord. It's about 10 o'clock. People are now going into the library. He actually unlocked the library himself. And I wonder if we have any volunteers who want to follow John around the library and observe what he's doing.
I
understand.
I don't have enough film.
No, not just to video him, but just to keep an eye on him, you know.
You missed my point.
No, I catch you.
I don't have police to police.
Oh, I see. Well,
they can't be trusted.
We found this fun book for my mother.
So we're talking with
Zach.
And Zach, you say I pointed out John, who is across the street walking now to the City Hall complex. You had an experience.
I was being followed by John down Church Street. I left the library, and I had a big backpack on, and I think because of that, he thought I was up to something. And while I was walking down the street with a girl, he started following us.
How far did he follow you for?
He followed us for about... It wasn't too far. It was about a block, but far enough to where I could tell he was following us.
And what was your response?
I didn't confront him or anything. I kept turning around to see if he was actually, like, if it was just in my head or if he was actually following
mm-hmm.
us. And
did you ask him if he had some business with you? Or?
No, I didn't come. I didn't go up to him and ask him anything. I just kind of sat down once I realized he was following us, and waited for him to make his move. Once I sat,
what did he do then?
He stood there for a while and just tried to make it look like he wasn't doing anything. Well, that's what it appeared like. And he, after a few minutes of not having anything, any other business in that area, he had no way of making it appear like he was doing something valid. So he turned around and walked back to the library.
That's your interpretation?
Yeah.
And how long ago was this?
This was probably mid-February.
Okay. Have you had any other encounters with him? Or other first alarm security guard?
I haven't had any other encounters with John. The African-American guy that works here, there's been a couple times.
First alarm guy?
Yeah. Where he hasn't let me inside because he thought that I was intoxicated.
Were you?
Yes.
Were you at such an intoxication that you would be disturbing others, or were you acting in an aberrant manner?
No, I wasn't being belligerent at all.
And what was your response to this?
I kind of accepted it and told him I didn't agree with it, but...
Did he do this before you entered the library, or did he come up to you while you were in the library?
No, this was before I entered. He was standing outside.
Did he do this to anyone else that you saw?
Not that day.
And how did he judge that you were intoxicated? Were you in some way stumbling, or, you know, how do you think he knew you were intoxicated?
I think the look on my face, I think...
Are you currently intoxicated?
No.
I didn't think so.
I think my eyes were slightly closed, and my face was probably my mannerisms, and my face was probably sagging a little from the muscles being loose.
How many times has this happened to you?
Twice.
By the same first alarm security man?
Yes.
Okay. Now, you're about to fill out a claim form against the city for... sleep deprivation. When did this happen?
I don't know if I'd necessarily call it sleep deprivation, but yeah, this happened 3 or 4 times.
And by sleep deprivation, I mean somebody woke you up and forced you in the middle of a sleep or a preparation for sleep, and as a consequence, you were not able to sleep at that time.
Yes.
That's what I mean by sleep deprivation. And so it happened 3 or 4 times, and were you ticketed on all those occasions?
No, those are the occasions that I was ticketed on. There was plenty of occasions where I had been woken up and not ticketed.
And were you given on any of those occasions a legal place to go?
They told me that... Well, they told my girlfriend at the time that the best course of action for us if we were to camp outside would be to stay near the shelter, because they tend not to ticket people if they're near the shelter.
And did you find that was accurate? Did you try that?
I had tried that before, and I found that to be fairly accurate, but there wasn't much comfortable space around there to sleep.
And last night, did you sleep outside illegally?
No.
You were indoors?
I was.
Oh, so you found a place to live, or just for a night?
Temporarily, yeah, I found a place to stay.
Very good. And we've been talking with?
Zachary.
Thank you, Zachary.
Well said.
It's around 20 to 11. We're talking with
David Parker.
And David, you say that there were some tickets being given today, although not as many are likely to happen after April 15th when the armory closes. But what did you see, or what did you observe today?
Out at the Lighthouse Park this morning, there was a girl that was woken up by police officers. She was alone and by herself out there sleeping.
Right.
And she was pretty upset being startled but they woke her up and writing her a ticket and citation for sleeping out there.
And how close were you to all this?
Within 50 yards.
And did you hear any of the dialogue?
I heard her asking, like, where's a girl supposed to sleep? That she was scared, you know, that she was just out trying to find somewhere where people weren't going to find her or attack her. And she didn't have an ID, so they were harassing her over that.
How many were there?
There were two officers.
Policemen or?
Policemen. Police officers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how long did the whole incident take?
About 15 minutes before the guards left.
Wow, 15 minutes for a sleeping ticket.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do you think that did they have some suspicion that she was a murderer on the loose? Or?
No, they just patrol the parks every morning, make sure there's no one sleeping there.
And, but they held her for 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Wow. And we've been talking with?
David Parker.
Thanks, David.
Sure. Should be on Trade Radio Thursday night or Sunday morning.
Okay. So tell me some more, David. You were saying that this is a regular practice?
Every morning, either on the beaches or the parks, they do sweeps around 7:30. And either the state police or local police go through and write tickets for anyone who's asleep on the beach.
And you know this because you hear it, because you're sleeping in a hideaway spot, because you've gotten tickets?
Because I'm sleeping somewhere, too, and getting up before I get a ticket.
Well, early to bed and early to rise keeps a homeless person very wise.
Exactly.
Thank you, David.
No problem.
Somebody on my shoes.
Mind if I interview you on that?
No, sure.
Talking with
Cesar Alfaro.
Says you just got yourself a plate of chips and coleslaw. Looks
sure good. Did.
But no coffee, unfortunately. We've run out.
He wants to make a claim, Robert.
And so I want to have you make a claim. But what happened?
I was camping up in the Pogonip Forest, and
may or may not have been.
This couple that invited me up there, we're very good stewards of the forest. You know, we were cleaning up needles, cleaning up all the drug paraphernalia that was left there from the past, and the rangers went up and did a sweep about a week and a half ago, and they left a notice saying if you don't have all your stuff taken up. You know, that we're going to cite anybody there and take all your stuff. So I wasn't able to make it up to my campsite. So now I'm living out of my backpack. And I've gotten two tickets in downtown because I've been so mentally and physically exhausted from not having a place to sleep at night. So I just want to get my stuff back.
Tell me about those last two tickets and about, we'll go into your stuff in a moment. Have you actually gone to the police department Tuesdays between 12:30 and 2:30, and Thursdays between 12:30 and 2:30.
That's what I'm doing today. That's what I'm going to do today.
Let us know. Of course, either we do have a Huff meeting every Wednesday, as I keep repeating, at 11.
Right.
And again, most regulars know this, but the police department will only allow you to reclaim your property on Tuesday and Thursday, and then only between the hours of 12:30 and 2:30, at least, unless things have changed in the last few weeks. Which I don't think they have. This can be very significant for people whose survival gear is taken, let's say, on a Thursday night or a Friday morning or a Friday night. They don't have any bedding. They don't have any, they may not have a warm coat. And maybe their ID has been taken, although I would hope that happens less frequently. But we've heard one account of where, I guess it was in Berkeley, the ID was taken. But it's happened here, too. In any case, one's property is not available for reclaiming except for the ridiculously short intervals that they allow, which, again, leads me to the general question about sort of broader police accountability, responsibility to the community. How much do they actually serve the community? I mean, there are stories over the weekend about massive funerals for a police officer who was shot on duty. And indeed, with no mention, of course, that there are many occupations that are far more dangerous and lethal than the police, a number of them anyway, ones you wouldn't think of, like farming and driving a tractor, things like that. But police officers, with their intensive lobbying and the fantasy that's promulgated that they're somehow defending the rights of the community, when that is often not the case, particularly if you're a poor person, they get a lot more credit than they should. Not that they shouldn't get credit when it's deserved, and I try to do that as well. I've written at least a dozen letters to the police department praising behavior of particular officers on different occasions, particularly when they've helped me personally. Usually has to do with cars, returning a stolen car. But often that doesn't require a lot of police work. They just happen to be the agency that people contact. In some cases it does. Anyway, let's hear some more from, again, this was a week ago. It was last Tuesday. It was last Tuesday in front of the library, where we'll again be showing up this Tuesday at 9:30 in case you want to join. Keeping an eye on security guards who are accused of harassing homeless people needlessly, pointlessly. Actually, there's never a reason to harass anybody. Well, perhaps not. Perhaps there is a reason. If you would call confronting officials harassment, then that's positive harassment. But it's not harassment when you demand questions and when you make it clear the community is watching what you're doing. Police officers and individuals who are posing as police officers, who feel they are somehow have that kind of power, like the security guards, will tell people to do things under a threat of, can be force, it can be a ticketing, it could be a fine, it could be jail. But they're frightening people into behaving in ways that I feel eliminate basic rights and basic access to public spaces. And that's wrong.
You have the card, probably.
Robert, I've heard a lot about you, and I'm really grateful for what you do, sir. Because I've been homeless since I've been 18, you know, it was a choice, because I didn't want to live with my mother and her husband, and, you know, I'm trying to get back to Costa Rica to live with my father's side of the family and to get an education.
What
down
did
there.
You actually lose in terms of property here?
Oh, my big backpacking backpack with my tent, my sleeping bag, my big old Mexican blanket, all my clothes, you know, yeah. Basically,
did you talk to anybody who was there when the property was taken?
No.
Because I did hear a camp was cleared and they dumped everything into a truck and dumped it. But they didn't.
Oh, our stuff was very clean. There were a few other campsites near us. We were off a lookout trail in Harvey West.
Okay.
Right up when you go up that top of Encinal and you take that trail up. We couldn't give them... I mean, it was hard for... let me restate that. We were so clean up there that, you know, I know it's illegal to camp up in the Pogonet, but, you know, we weren't harming anybody. We weren't doing anything, you know, harmful.
So after that downtown, you got two citations for resting or over what
one
happened?
I fell asleep in that parking lot right over there.
You're pointing to the...
That parking lot, that parking structure?
The parking structure that's kitty corner from the... it's on the corner of Cedar and Church Street.
Yes, exactly. And I was so tired, I just fell asleep there one night, and one of the officers, I forgot her name, but she gave me a ticket for, I forgot what it is.
Sleeping?
Something like that.
I have to take a look.
Yeah.
And the other time?
One other ticket was for, I was in front of Forever 21, and this strange woman comes by, and she asked me to use her blanket, and I felt bad for her, you know, she, kind of snuggled up next to me. Anyway, I kind of dozed off because I'm so tired. And
Day or night?
Huh?
Day or night?
It was at 4 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I get woken up by an officer, and I get a ticket for sitting within 14 inches or 14 feet of a building.
Serious crime.
Yeah, serious crime.
Yeah.
I'm a derelict.
And we've been talking with?
Cesar Alfaro.
Thank you, Cesar.
Thank you, Robert Norris. Norse, right?
That's it? Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, you know.
It's still library time. It's 10 to 11 on the 31st of March. And again, I'm talking with
Cesar Alfaro.
And Cesar, you mentioned that you were sleeping in front of the building across the street, which is the Prophet Elias Greek Orthodox Church, and something happened?
Yeah, about three nights ago, I didn't have any blankets or anything, so this homeless gentleman, Joe, he let me borrow a couple blankets, and he let me crash with him that night on the steps of the church. And
Did you have the permission of the pastor?
Yes, Joe does. Yes. And he said, you know, I could stay for one night. You know, I was just, you know, kind of down and out and didn't know where to go that night. So anyway, I take my shoes off and I put my shoes under the blanket. And I wake up in the morning to find my shoes gone. And in my left shoe, I had my cell phone. And in my right shoe, I had my mother's uncle's Boy Scout pocket knife from the 50s, you know. I know it's material possessions, but...
Was Joe gone as well?
No, Joe woke up in the morning with me, and, like, he... I don't have any suspicion that he had anything to do with it, but... It's just really, it's really outrageous. It's the audacity of somebody to go under my blankets while I'm sleeping to steal my only pair of shoes. I was walking around barefoot for half a day until someone blessed me with these boots.
All right.
You know, and it's pretty sad.
Have you tried telephoning your number to see who's
no,
answering?
No, I disconnected it.
I see.
They changed the number. So, I just disconnected it and... I don't have a phone. Again, second cell phone I've gotten stolen since I've been in Santa Cruz. First one, someone pickpocketed my cell phone in front of Blue Lagoon.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, you know, are you generally outdoors, or were you at times indoors?
As far as what?
As far as sleeping at night.
Oh, outdoors. Yeah, I was camping up in the Pogonip. When I first got to town, I was sleeping at that red church, but it was too hectic, you know, crazy people waking me up in the middle of the night asking me to use a lighter, like people trying to break into the women's bathroom, and it was just too much chaos over there. So this couple, Paul and Katie, invited me up to the Pogo Nip, and I was there for about a month until this whole issue went on with... I invited this elderly woman up to the forest who was... sleeping at the red church when I first got there, and she invited her heroin addicted son up there, and it was just a long story. And basically what ended up happening was that they were keeping up my friend Paul up one night, because my friend Paul had to go to MH Can in the morning to do some volunteer thing for to get food for everybody at the camp. Anyways, Joe threatened my friend Paul with violence. Paul is a black belt. He doesn't tell many people that, so Paul, you know, kicked him in the stomach. Joe backed down. The next morning, we go up to me and Joe and say, you guys can't stay here anymore. We can't, you know, we're not going to accept people threatening violence. And anyway, they wouldn't leave, so I had to call the police. I felt like there was no other option, you know, because they were, it just wasn't a right place for them. So anyway, the next day, the police were called. They couldn't really do anything, or they didn't really want to do anything, until the next day. Same issue. We said, all right, you guys have to go, or else we're calling the cops. We're going to bring a higher authority if you guys can't respect what we're trying to ask of you. Anyway, my friend Paul gets arrested for defending himself. Joe got arrested for assault. My friend Paul gets arrested for defending himself. You know, his parents...
And you get arrested for wearing a bicycle helmet.
Yes.
No, not really.
Yeah, anyway, it's just really sad, because I invited this elderly woman up to the forest.
I remember, yeah.
And now the whole campsite is just, you know, Paul and Katie are gone. My campsite's gone. You know, it's just...
And you're wandering around with a new pair of boots, but a lost pair of shoes.
Yes.
And more tickets. And again, we've been talking with...
Cesar Alfaro.
Thank you, Cesar.
Thank you.
Oh, boy. Well, it's time for me to go to the doctor. I'm going to go see a doctor. Get my checkup. Where did Becky take off after the operation? So about 11 o'clock, and we're talking with...
My name is James Wright.
And we're outside the library still. And James, you had a grievance about stuff that happened out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center.
I do try to stay. I stay there, I help out as much as I can. I volunteer, and it's just the people that are running it. James Wright.
And James, any sleeping tickets recently? Anything you want to talk about with respect to that?
I actually left the shelter a couple of times.
We'll do it right now.
Where to go, but then when you see what it's like, you know what I mean?
So tell me a little bit about this. You say that you actually had a bed in the Pauley Loft?
Yeah, I currently do. I don't know how much longer I will, but I currently do, and a lot of people just, they'll get a 30-day bunk because at first, you know, you're new around and you don't know what the shelter's like, but once you find, you get a taste of it, you know what I mean, you end up leaving. You try to keep your bunk, and you know what I mean? But a lot of people are just would rather try to stay outside and deal with police than they would the shelter, and I think that's wrong. You know, I mean, it shouldn't be that bad for anybody.
But we don't want your kind hanging around either in the shelter or outside
right,
the
exactly,
shelter. Preferably
exactly.
In three counties over.
Like, all I'm saying is, respectfully, where should we go? You know what I mean? I mean, that's all I ask when I say, where do you
it's
want
only
me to
a
go? Just the point of not
take care,
doing
man.
What they should do. They have all these cameras, all this high-tech stuff they're getting, yeah. And they have all this funding, and they have people that donate to them, but they can't get powdered milk. You know what I mean?
About at the Loft? What made
the
you
loft,
decide to leave?
Like, they're fair about you, really, and they show it. Like, instead of helping you, they dog you down, and now they got us doing, like, this ID thing, scanning your barcode.
So we have an example of first alarm John harassing a person near the library.
Oh.
Everybody come take a look. He's forcing folks to move on who are not doing anything particularly criminal.
Right, that's what's happening to the world, though.
Get
man.
A job, John. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, anyway, it is, they kick you out of the shelter. I don't think society or whatever, you know, they know that. We're not allowed to be there anyway.
This is a worthy alarm about first alarm, John. He just harassed me in the library. My name's Harley on that street.
Thank you, James.
No problem.
And his harassment in the library, I can detail quite briefly.
Don't go away, James.
It's rather simple. I was sitting writing a note to myself who was passing me and turned to look at the man. He said to me, as I sat with my bags at the table, he said to me, would you please give me your attention for a moment? I'd like to explain to you that you're not, haven't done what we just talked about, that I had asked you to place your bags all together. The bags were together, so...
How many bags were there?
There were three, actually, and the previous time there were only two together, and one had been separate with me as I wrote my note. Instead, I had placed that third bag, according to our promise, with the other two, and he came by and said, excuse me for your attention for a moment, but I thought we'd agreed you'd put your three bags together. There they were beside me in a chair. So I said to him, please get there today. He's absent. Instead, you're talking to your supervisor, sir, like I said. But the lady, she happened to be talking with him. So I said to the lady, how about you? Do you know I'm with my bags? And she nodded, yes. Exactly. Another harassment case.
Did you continue about your business in the library, or did you feel driven away? That's something that I've been
feeling. But I noticed you called him First Alarm, John. I didn't know he was working for First Alarm. Usually I've seen him at the library or City Hall.
I think that they are patrolling City Hall. Thank you, Harley. All right. And we have a final report on the library from Becky Johnson that Big John...
And that was the report from the library. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. And listening to the closing half hour of Bathrob Spears Broadsides, we're going to play a little more, I think. But we'll be going back to the library this Tuesday to keep an eye on security guard activity there, take reports and so forth, and you can too. It'll be at 9 on Tuesday morning.
It can break it as sure as there's the mountains and the dark coal and the clay. Up in the mountains, families praying. Virginia. Though my heart can never go, and mother's father spent a lifetime in the cold. But it's true, my favorite airport doesn't have the New York Times, just some
And that was Carol Denny, The Dark Cool, and The Click.
I used to do a lot of stupid things, and so they'd give me stayaways, but now they just write me tickets, throw it away in the trash.
Is this one time you got such a citation?
Probably about four.
The police have failed to give you your customary ticket?
Where I sleep, the cops are, they understand that we're sleeping there, but they want us up and away at a certain time. If I oversleep my alarm and I don't get up at a certain time,
ticket.
Then I get a ticket. But if I'm up and away,
it was removed.
Probably about 4 weeks ago.
And did you talk to any of the people either responsible for removing them or mm-hmm. who knew about that?
I was there when they took the benches out, and they told me that the day before yesterday. And he told me that he wanted the benches back because, you know, they're like, I may drink a little, but I'll do it on my own private space. I don't do it out in public. And so that they're trying to have less fights and less what's saying.
Is that your analysis?
Yeah, in a row, we pass the bottle down, and two people get in a fight. It's done.
Have you
but,
seen that happen very much?
Sometimes. Sometimes.
How many times a year would you say have you seen it?
A year?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
How many times a month?
How about a month, yeah, or like a week.
Clean you out again.
Basically.
That's
and
very
she,
nice.
And she said, well, I understand the situation is bad because you're getting flushed out of all these spots, but the Depot Park as a scenery area.
And that was a smattering of Cage's Lament, taking some real action. Well, at least they're making some policies. I've heard his police seem to be ignoring the issue without a meaningful response from any kind of other agencies. But here's what, at least they took this kind of token action, woo-woo, in response to beatings and indiscriminate use of CS gas and projectile shot moratorium on CS gas, wooden and rubber, on Tuesday, February 10th, in council chambers, packed with dozens of people telling chilling stories of Berkeley police abuse during December's local protests over nationwide police killings of unarmed black citizens. A temporary moratorium on the use of CS gas, wooden and rubber, I think that's, we're talking tear gas, wooden and rubber projectiles and over-the-shoulder baton are commonly called tear gas, but racial profiling. The public comment that night brought forth deeply troubling testimony from people whose efforts to nonviolently protest police killings of unarmed black citizens, such as Michael Brown and Eric Garner, were met with beatings, CS gas, and projectiles shot directly into crowds. Many of those arrested were given no way to leave an area corralling is what I think they call that. People attempting to help injured fallen individuals were also beaten, and emergency vehicles were prohibited from assisting. Polly Armstrong, a former police review commissioner, former city council member, and current CEO of the Berkeley Chamber of Commerce, spoke in support of the police use of wooden and rubber projectiles, saying the police, quote, need our support. Vice Chairman of the Chamber's board, Stephen Donaldson, also objected to the temporary moratorium, stating, we do not need to disempower the police right now. But Armstrong herself was one of the authors of a policy created when she was on the Police Review Commission in 1992, requiring the police to move a crowd only as quickly as they could reasonably walk. A video reveals that this policy was widely ignored by police in the December 2014 protests. The rest of the public testimony in its support of a temporary moratorium, Moni Law, 55-year-old African-American, misconduct in a meeting featuring skunk oil. That night, a protester ran into the Berkeley Community Theater stage and poured a noxious fluid onto some of the council members' vests. I think that was Denny, the author of the article. Then Berkeley Chief of Police Dash Butler and then City Manager Michael Brown both claimed that I had committed an assault on the chief. Lost their jobs, and I was acquitted when Channel 7 news footage revealed that I had been peacefully standing still waiting for my opportunity to speak. 1991, I'm not aware, however, that either of those guys ever faced criminal for perjury or false prosecution. That's Dash Butler, former Berkeley police chief, and city manager Michael Brown. This is my comment as I read Carol Denny's story. The 1991 moratorium proposal of among part of their holiday experience in Berkeley, the vote for the police reform was unanimous. The long wait for these proposals, originally scheduled for December, was frustrating for many who had come to respond to meetings only to be met with inaction, especially those primarily at risk. Even the FBI's self-reported data reveal that statistic. But the coalition of students end up with hours of footage and no particular expertise in storing and sorting them. In 1992, the Berkeley City Council passed a law requiring that the Berkeley Police Department take direct supervisory responsibility over mutual aid, and that prior to deployment in the field, mutual aid units they are required to complete. Channon finished his testimony by noting that the Berkeley Mayor Tom Bates' idea apparently can't be accessed on this machine all the time. And that what happens, in fact, is police officers are selective about it. The sad thing is they aren't even, well, the thing that pisses me off is that not only are they being selective about who they tell to move their table, but they're going up and giving laws on Pacific Avenue. Definitely not one of my favorite people, though as an individual she's personable enough. Here's some those men, and then we'll...
This is the first night he's done this?
No, well, last night was the first night ever. And he's back for a return. You better interview.
I am, of course.
You really should interview this man. He's very interesting.
I'm an accomplished dancer. I'm well known in
dance
circles.
Oh, me too. I was twirling like this.
The
still,
Holy Grail?
Still to this day, the Monty Pythons have not found the Holy Grail, to my knowledge.
No doubt they'll keep looking.
No doubt they still.
Here's a man.
So listen, you.
We're talking with
Truth Now.
And Truth Now, you are at your wood portrait. What is it?
Yes, this is Wood Nouveau by Phoenix Rose.
Okie doke. Now, Phoenix Rose isn't here right now.
He's not. He's out.
But you say you've had some experiences on the street that you think beer passed.
If you want to interview them personally, I will say as a witness, she was a terrible woman with no love in her heart. Almost certainly. She wouldn't identify herself. She had previously provided me with information that she...
And I should say that it was determined later, as I said, that this was Julie Hendy, if you looked at the signature on the ticket, not Councilmember Pamela Comstock. So that seemed to be the initial identification. It was, I think, an error. Julie Hendy is... It's kind of interesting. Julie Hendy is a staff member, and I've often stated on this show, and it's been my persistent belief, that staff members have a lot more power than council members, though that may seem to be kind of contradictory because council members are elected by the people. Staff members simply get paid. Of course, they get paid more than council members, and they're there for a longer period of time. And as I said, I think they have a lot more power. I may have to kind of leave this one for another time. one of the great disadvantages of audio recording with my clumsy fingers. I'm not insistence of Julie Hendy, and I guess they, but she's also an art critic, so I'll have to get into that. Check it out, and I'll be back. In the meantime, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, if you have reactions, comments, thoughts, additions, addendas, anything. Get in touch.
It's stream in early spring, but it's really the first water ever to enter the Panama Canal proper, finding its way into it from the Chagres River. And the cost? Well, it's difficult to get actual figures, but the entire canal had an estimated cost of some $375 million.
Officially opening in 1914, the Panama Canal connected the Atlantic and Pacific, creating a shortcut for ships. It was the biggest infrastructure project of its time. But originally, the United States wanted to build the canal in Nicaragua. The plans shifted largely after French engineer Philippe Jean Bonneau Varilla convinced U.S. lawmakers otherwise. Well, now Nicaragua canal plans are back on the table. Nicaragua plans to build a $50 billion canal to connect the Caribbean and Pacific. Supporters argue it will create more than 250,000 jobs. But small farmers and environmentalists say the project will destroy Lake Nicaragua. On this edition, we'll take a look at the economic, political, and environmental controversies surrounding the Nicaragua Canal. Reporter Reese Ehrlich has the story.
Waves lap languorously against the shore on Ometepe Island in the middle of Lake Nicaragua. The Nicaraguan government and a Chinese development company plan to build a massive canal that will include digging a channel through this, the largest freshwater lake in Central America. Maria Marcelin, a fisherman's wife, says the noise and pollution from a nearby tourist construction site has already started to chase fish away.
Right now, they're just getting started, and the fish are already scarce. If they continue, everything is definitely going to go away completely.
Marcelin reflects the concerns of many who depend on Lake Nicaragua. In late 2014, the Hong Kong Nicaragua Development Company, or HKND, broke ground on the 170-mile interoceanic canal, which will be three times the size of the Panama Canal. It's one of the largest infrastructure projects in the world. It will reduce shipping costs for supertankers bringing goods from the eastern U.S. to Asia. Canal supporter Michael Healy, head of an agribusiness association, says it will provide over $50 billion in foreign investment and create 250,000 full-time and construction jobs.
For our economy, it'd be an excellent step. We have a steady between 4 to 4.5% of growth every year. I believe with the canal, you know, that will be around 10% if we start building the canal. I believe it's very important because we're going to create a lot of jobs, you know.
But at what cost to the environment and to small farmers or campesinos booted off their land? In a gritty Managua neighborhood, environmental lawyer and anti-canal activist Monica Lopez shows me around her NGO office. Her family has a long history opposing the Somoza dictatorship that ruled the country until 1979.
It was an old private residence during Somoza's time. And now, for the past 25 years, is the residence of Fundación Popolnah, but also more than four NGOs that have their offices here, along with us. Officers. We have pictures of Che Guevara, pictures of Sandino. We also have some pictures of the most important poets of Nicaragua, four female poets that are there, along with some of their poems.
We walk into her office. Lopez is a leader in the leftist opposition to the canal. She's concerned about the lack of environmental controls and exclusive rights granted to HKND. Under the agreement, H can maintain at least some canal ownership for up to
our most valuable natural resources, including Lake Nicaragua, which is the most important water reserve for all Central America. It commits our forest, our coast resources, our biodiversity.
Lopez says Nicaraguan President Daniel Ortega and the Sandinista Party have moved to the right politically, and the terms of the canal project prove it. Nicaragua will receive up to $10 million a year in fees and take 10% ownership every 10 years, becoming the majority partner only after 51 years. Lopez says in 2012, Nicaragua actually passed a good canal law that upheld national sovereignty.
To be honest, the terms of that law weren't so bad. In fact, they said that in any case that this project could be done in Nicaragua, that Nicaragua would take care of applying environmental laws, national treaties, that we would never lose the capacity of taking the biggest decisions on how the project was going to be done, in which areas and which people would be affected. In general, it says that the Nicaragua would keep the rights to decide on the project.
But in early 2014, the canal, the origins and future role of those 16 subsidiaries remain opaque.
Ortega's government gave accomplish and do what the concessionary says you have to do in there. Even public authorities as the army and the police are completely obliged to protect this project. We are basically basic elements that should be on the table to do this. And it doesn't matter who is taking that. But in terms of our point of view as Nicaragua, the results are exactly the same if it's Wanjing or if it's mainland are still the same for us. But of course, we wouldn't want to be in the middle of a geopolitical. But of course, it's really possible that that done with the project.
Lionel arguing that HKND is a development company interested in making money, not part of some geopolitical plot.
This is a private investment. From a private company. There are no governments at all in Nicaragua, but even in Washington. He's a private man, a private businessman, and that the government of China is not behind. The president of Costa Rica, President Fulwick, and he has stated publicly
to help build and finance it.
And one of the guarantees that we have that the project will be a success are so far the companies that they have disclosed publicly so far that will be involved in the project.
But a list of international corporate sponsors doesn't impress residents of Ometepe Island. A ferry chugs slowly out from the port at San Jorge, headed for the island. Backpackers looking for a cheap vacation mixed with locals bringing home vegetables and even a motorcycle tire. Residents lead quiet lives, fishing, growing vegetables, and catering to low-impact tourism. The ferry drops anchor, and dozens of people head to shore. Down the road, the wind blows hard along a sandy beach. Rosabel Lopez, who owns a local snack bar, worries that canal dredging as deep as 100 feet will ruin the lake's ecology.
No estamos de acuerdo aquí en Nicaragua.
We disagree here in Nicaragua, especially here on the island of Ometepe, because it would harm the lake. It would mean the death of the fish with the contaminated water, with everything they're going to do. So, we don't agree. We don't want the canal. Here, us Nicaraguans, especially the islanders, we don't want the canal.
Lopez expresses another common concern, that the Hong Kong Development Company will exercise eminent domain not only to buy up land for the canal, but for tourism projects as well.
Otra cosa, por medio de ese canal, los chinos han venido a hacer medidas.
Another thing, through the canal, the Chinese have been measuring the land along the coast of the island. They say they're going to buy if the owners of the land don't want to sell. They'll push them out and force the sale. They're going to get a price that is very low. And if they don't want to sell, the owners are going to be moved out. That's what they're saying around.
Spokesperson for the nonprofit Foundation for Nicaraguan Sustainable Development. Far from it. He says the overall impact will be felt far beyond the lake's boundaries.
Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact.
Opponents of the Nicaraguan canal mix sometimes xenophobic conspiracy theories. For example, with a lower Spain to set up a military base on Ometepe Island to protect the canal. She claims the Chinese have a sinister motive.
Promises to build two ports, an airport, highways, and obviously the canal. Then we see it with very good eyes.
my map.
In the city of Brito, along Nicaragua's Pacific coast, Antonio Granados drives his new SUV.
Miramar property is where the...
whose property lies directly along the canal route.
Here, it would be there.
The majority of Nicaraguans support the canal. An overwhelming 71% of those living from the canal route support it. But only 42% of those living directly along the canal path do so. The canal is slated for completion by 2020 at a cost of $50 billion. Supporters claim the project will be finished on time and on budget, but as with other massive infrastructure projects around the world, cost overruns are likely. Over the next few months, HKND plans to buy up land along the canal route and then begin construction of related projects like seaports years away, leaving many issues unresolved. Back on Ometepe Island, the campesinos vow to continue their struggle until the canal is stopped. Campesino leader Osvaldo Navas quotes a famous Nicaraguan poet to make his point.
Bueno, respondería con una palabra de el Mac.
Very hospitable, polite, human olive brand.
Supporting our work. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact. The Making Contact team includes Lisa Rudman, Andrew Stelzer, George Lavender, Jasmine Lopez, Juan Booth.
Thank you. Dramarama, and then you just heard Nirvana, and I can song, but it's still Joy Division, but I didn't want it to be like this sad, so yeah, sorry. There was a technical difficulty in my brain, and so I totally screwed this up. But you just heard the Red Hot Chili Peppers, duh. And then before that, we listened to Joy Division. And did everybody know that Joy Division got their name from the certain section in the concentration camp where the Nazis would basically have women there and they would get their pleasure from them, and they were called the Joy Division. Anyway, that's a nice little story. And I'm going to play some MIA. And, yeah, sorry, I'm a little bit out of it today. Yeah. Glang, glang.
Boys say rock, one girl say rock, rock, London calling, state the slang now. Boys say rock, one girl say rock.